Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys, I...
You want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker,
baby! Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 39 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani. We are talking about a movie that came out a long time ago today. Finally getting to it. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Also an interview with one Thomas Jane. Tom Jane from Arrested Development. Also many other things, but...
Primarily Arrested Development.
And then we're also going to do a draft of movie scenes that make you tear up, because there's some emotional scenes in Everything Everywhere All at Once. Our sister podcast, as we'll call every podcast at Barstool sister podcast. Dog Walk, Chicago Dog. They did one very similar recently. Just noting that off the top, but we will be doing that as well. We weren't on that one, and that's not a shot at it. Actually, yeah, fuck Eddie, right?
Yeah, Eddie, fuck you, dude.
Put this out.
Why'd you have Kate on for that? What the hell was that?
Fuck man. That idiot, Eddie. Love Eddie.
I can't do that. I love Eddie too much. I can't even.
what a piece of shit that guy is. Now, go check that out. It was a really good episode. I'm curious if we're gonna have different stuff. We're gonna we said tear up. I think you can make it positive and negative too. They were mostly, if I recall, all sad.
Almost entirely negative.
Yeah.
I can remember one that was positive, but yeah, mostly negative.
Yeah. But first, this episode brought to you by Allbirds. That's right, footwear company that creates shoes that are made from natural materials. Better for you, better for the planet. I've worn Allbirds for years. Lightweight, very springy, comfortable. If you're running, if you're just hanging out, it doesn't matter. But their Tree Flyer sneakers are fantastic. I've worn the Wool Runners forever. I got them dirty as shit this weekend here in Belmar, New Jersey at DJ's, which is, if you've been to this area of the New Jersey, it's dirty floors. Great place, dirty floors. Cleaned them off, great. No issue. And like a shoe like that, like you'd think like that's going to be destroyed. No, great, good to go. But they're Tree Flyer sneakers, the other one we're talking about. Great cushion, great comfort. If you run, I don't. They're fantastic. I run to like be first in line for like pizza or something. Like that's what I don't run for like fucking workout purposes. But if you do, they're great. And also, you can dress them up, they're not just for working out. It's lighter weight. Wearing Allbirds, it's like pillows on, like seriously, like it's like wearing air. The midsole is super light. Very cushiony. Heel provides good balance for a good stable ride, whether you're running, walking, all that and more. So lace up with the Tree Flyer or anything at Allbirds. Allbirds, Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com. Also, really a great collection of shoelaces, too, at the company. And I know that not like shoelaces aren't like a normal – like Allbirds didn't invent shoelaces. But if you get a couple of neutral color shoes, you can really – change them up with just the shoelaces, which is always nice. Mm-hmm. So, highly suggest.
You did a clean too. I cleaned one of mine for the first time the other day. It was super, super fast.
And they don't, the sole is very, very easy to clean, like very quick. And you know, that's always the part of the shoe that looks the most hideous. Yeah, so go to Allbirds, allbirds.com. Fantastic, fantastic shoe company. Before we get into it, let's go. Ken Jack went to, I'm jealous. I tried to go. It didn't make sense. I'm spending my weekends to shore all summer. I rented a shore house with one of my coworkers, Glenn Balls, not here this weekend. So I tried to go back to New York for the U.S. Masters, the darts event, featuring some of the greatest darts throwers in the world, from Michael Van Gerwen to Gerwin Price, all that and more. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge darts fan, massive, massive darts fan. I watch as much as I can possibly watch the Premier League darts. I was bummed I couldn't go. It looked pretty electric. every single person, well, in the Premier League for darts, every single person for Premier League darts is just an absolutely electric factory. Like, it is, like, it's nothing like you've ever seen. Like, everyone in the Premier League is unreal. And they just put on a fucking show, and they're literally just throwing darts. That's all they do. But how was it? How was darts?
It was incredible. We all met at a ex-Barstool employee Mikey Podcast's apartment. And there's, like, as we're, like, we're getting in, there's, like, a few people, right? And then all of a sudden we realized it's actually, like, there's 55 people lined up to go to this darts game.
The amount of tickets that were purchased.
Huge amount of people. We all walked there, and as we're getting into MSG, we were legit just chanting, "Let's go darts," because none of us know really that much about darts. All we know is that we love Gerwin Van Price, and that's it. Van Gerwen. I almost said that's the problem, is that there's another guy named Gerwin.
Yeah, Gerwin Price and Michael Van Gerwen.
Yeah, so Michael Van Gerwen. But like, so we're going into the Hulu Theater, which is behind MSG. We're all just chanting, like, it's deafening because it's like an echo chamber. Just, "Let's go darts," screaming like crazy. The commissioner comes out, and we boo the fuck out of him. We don't know anything about this guy. We booed the shit out of him to the point where he very much noticed it. And every single time he would, like, try to do a little prelim thing, we would just start chanting, "We want darts." And it drowned him out of the entire amphitheater. He couldn't fucking hear anything. And, like, so we go through, like, the first preliminary rounds. Like, we don't really know most of the people going except for the guy with the crazy mohawk who he's, like, number one in the world. Something
Peter Wright.
Peter Wright, yeah. We don't know most of them, but Van Gerwen comes out last. The place exploded for this, like, lumpy-looking Dutchman. It is incredible. If you don't know darts,
there's a chance you've seen. There's so
you have to. Darts, yeah.
There's the nine darter. It's electric. It's incredible to watch when you throw nine perfect darts. You've probably seen the video. If you've seen Dark, you know Dark, you've probably seen the video, but it's this larger bald man. He's Dutch. He is just insane. And his fist pumps are crazy, but there's one where he almost threw 18 consecutive perfect darts. He threw 17 consecutive perfect darts. And it would have been the first time it was ever televised. So it actually doesn't, like, a nine dart finish doesn't, because there wasn't one this weekend, right? There wasn't a nine.
No, he's the only one that came close, like, at all. He did like four different occasions. He got, like, two darter. And, like, we were waiting for it. And every time there's a 180, like, people are going ballistic. Doesn't matter who's up.
You had the 180 signs.
Oh yeah. I had a 180 sign with it had bet365 on the top. He tore it all off. So it was, we were having fun with it.
The guy, yeah, he's like, 100.
180. And, yeah, like, it's ballistic.
It is absolutely a fucking blast to watch. But it is my current dream sporting event to go to. I would go to, I don't care where it is in the UK, I would go to any event. The playoffs actually are next week. The playoffs for darts. You saw a couple of the guys who are in the final four. John Clayton. Johnny Clayton, I know, is in it. Michael Van Gerwen, James Wade is in it.
Van Gerwen can't play. He has carpal tunnel. He's getting surgery on carpal tunnel. He's not going to make it.
There was a huge he had a COVID issue at one point. I think it was last
year. Also, that Scottish guy, who I believe was Clayton, he almost missed the tournament because he had bad Wi-Fi and didn't miss out on the invitation. Which is also just amazing. That's just darts.
It is so fucking cool. They all have their own, like, again, like you mentioned the mohawk. Almost all of them are tatted up. That's one of the other funny things too. Like they're all tatted up. They got the number one guy in the world, Peter Wright. He has these crazy mohawks that he changes up every time. Gerwin Price is this Welshman. He won the Premier League a few years ago. He is a lunatic on stage.
He went nuts. Every time he even hit a dart, he was like fist pumping, like flexing and shit on everyone. It was awesome.
It's fun to watch. And the crowds for these events, they're just, in England, like, they're just drunk and they're drinking, they're throwing their beer in the air, and it is a fucking party. And it's just fun. It's fun to watch. It's not just the nine darters. You're like, just go watch like dart compilation videos. You'll get addicted. It's awesome.
Our group, which was like, it was again, like 50 people in a section. We were flanked on all sides by British people. And like, they gradually throughout the course of the game realized we didn't really know a lot about darts. And they're like, you're pulling our leg. Like, you really don't know anything about darts that much. And we're just like, no, we just fucking love the atmosphere. We wanted to come by. And like, they're all doing like these very specific chants, and we're just chanting, "Let's go darts." and Michael Van Gerwen to like the tune of like a bunch of different songs. And like, we were just having an absolute goddamn blast. And I just, I would highly recommend going to a darts competition to anyone. You just get, everyone just got blasted. Like, people were throwing shit everywhere. Like you were saying, like, it was insane. Like, we weren't even out of the quarterfinals when people were stumbling, getting their way up the stairs, like falling down drunk. Like, it was incredible.
I just love that Michael Van Gerwen is going to, I hadn't read his quote yet. It is very funny about his carpal tunnel. Yeah. Right after the playoffs are done. So he's going to miss the World Cup. If you haven't checked it out, and if you have a trip to the UK anytime soon, you're a sports fan. Like, I actually don't know. Cause like, I have been to London once. It was 10 years ago. I don't know what like tickets are like, but if you have an opportunity to go, you should go. Now, granted, the season's about to be over, but if you have an opportunity to go to one of these things, it starts in February, ends now in June, go to a Premier League, because it looks like a fucking blast, like an absolute blast.
They were only like $40 and like to get our entire section, like each person. It was nuts.
Crazy.
Oh man, I would do that again in an absolute heartbeat. It was such a blast.
So yeah, check out darts.
Check them out.
Darts. Movie news and stuff. Let's start off with the top. Kenobi thoughts. Let's do Kenobi episode 3 thoughts. Spoiler alert if you haven't watched Kenobi yet. Though at this point, I mean, come on, it's Monday. So it's like, if you haven't watched now, I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, maybe you're busy, but I gotta figure you don't care that much. Wild episode. An episode that's making people poop themselves because they think it's ruined fucking canon and everything. Even though, like, if you really read the script, it's like, it really doesn't. Like, yeah, it pushes the limits, but literally anything they do now is going to probably push the boundaries of like what George Lucas said. Though, granted, George Lucas also, that's why I quote tweeted that guy who comes like, he's like, you're fucking what George Lucas said. I'm like, I don't know. George Lucas said that Leia knew her fucking mother, and then like 20 years later said she didn't. So I don't really know what to fucking tell you on that.
Such
one.
Such a baby.
It's like, it's literally like George, like, so I think it's okay. But yeah, Obi-Wan and Vader show down. And it was Vader's a dick. Kills a kid, a teen. Not that he hasn't done that before. Snap someone's neck. I thought it was a fucking cool episode. I thought it was surreal to see. It was one of those like you watch, you're like, what the fuck? This is kind of crazy. Like, this is, it's Vader, Obi-Wan. This is wild.
Yeah. I would agree. I think the Vader scenes were the best part of that. And I think that Reva gained a lot of brownie points with me because I didn't enjoy her first two appearances very much, but I think she was way better in this one. The fifth brother as well, which I believe is Sung Kang, he is awesome. That effect they put on his voice is so cool. Like that almost like robotic little like after effect thing is sick. Also, that creature, that like collaborator creature thing that they had was very funny. That was voiced by Zach Braff the entire time I watched it. I was like, oh, Seth Rogen cameo. That's cool. Nope, Zach Braff. I thought he was cool. The only thing that I think I took away from this episode is that I think the soundtrack is just not up to
that
par.
That's my thing. I agree. I don't know what it is. And Chris, I'm curious what you think about this too. So I was going to tweet it, but I'm going to save it for the episode. So the Reva thing, I like Reva, whatever. I know it's a whole fucking other thing and some people don't like her. I think some people don't like her for probably very justifiable reasons, a different character. Some people are definitely being racist. She shared some of the stuff online. Mm-hmm. As long as she doesn't do fucking parkour again, I'm okay. Like the parkour running needs to just never have, like, so bad. Just didn't look right. The soundtrack is my one. And Chris, I'll let you talk about this. Doesn't it sound like they're about to go into the Force theme every time and they don't? But it almost like it's something's like weird about it. Just something's weird about the theme. I don't know what it is.
You know what it reminds me of? And I actually love this movie is the music in Rogue One, where you had Giacchino, who's brilliant for the record. But that entire movie, I remember being like, I feel like we're about to get iconic Star Wars music.
But then
here.
It stopped short.
Right. And then, you're teasing me with it because I have actually no issue with familiar characters, familiar themes, familiar music in Star Wars. Like, that's a weird, we all adore Red Media. That's one of the weird complaints to me that they've always had, which is like, oh my God, I went to a Star Wars movie and I saw an X-Wing. Like, no fucking shit. Like, that's like going to a baseball movie and seeing gloves and bats. Like, of course, these are familiar themes that show up in these things all the time. Like, duh. Episode 3 was good. Yeah, I like it so far. With all TV shows, I can't give a proper assessment to like the end. There's minor things I'm crazy about. What's that?
We're close to the end.
Yeah, two more, right?
Yeah, we're halfway there. There are minor things that bother me. And part of it is I am a child of the prequels, and I wrote a whole blog about like, man, I I really think the hand-to-hand combat scenes post-Disney buyout suck. Like, I really don't. And I understand with this one, it's a little bit more understandable because, you know, Obi-Wan's a bit older, but I'm not crazy about it. There's one thing I loved about this episode, though, because it reminded me so much of old-time, like, Cantina Star Wars. I love the Uber sequence in this. When he gets in the cab, they're essentially the equivalent of the cab, and it's the annoying taxi driver who's like, you know, around here, we love the Empire. I'm like, that was charming Star Wars, like, endearingness to me. So it's good so far. I have no major complaints other than it's just good. And in fairness, in both seasons of The Mandalorian, I felt that way until, like, the last three episodes. I'm like, it's good. And then you get to the end, it just blows you away. So I like where they're going.
I never did with Mando from the jump both times. I will say I like Obi-Wan. I like the show. Like, I didn't like Boba Fett. Like overall, which I don't even count the Mandalorian episodes. Those are just literal Mandalorian episodes. It's like the weirdest thing. I just didn't love Boba Fett. Like, it never got to that point with me. I like the show. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere near as good as Mando. Mandalorian is awesome. Mandalorian is so perfectly well. It's so. It just has this aura about it. It's these quiet, like, missions and, like, beautiful scenes. The music is fucking incredible. So there you go. Music is such a great companion to why Mandalorian works. Like, it, like, the Mandalorian having, like, long scenes where there's no dialogue and you just feel so immersed. The Mandalorian is just, it's a fair level above Obi-Wan, and that's not to say I don't like Obi-Wan. It's just good. I mean, it racks up Emmy nominations for best series, so it's like it's a good fucking show.
It's weird too because the composer, I think it's Natalie Holt. Like, she did Loki. Loki's soundtrack was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was so good. It was one of the best parts of the entire show. And then with this, I feel like it sounds more to me almost like CW ish. While they're having like this fight, like the last fight we saw between Anakin and Obi-Wan, we had like fucking Battle of the Heroes playing, like one of the coolest soundtracks in all of Star Wars. And like this moment, they're meeting for the first time after like what, 10 years, 10 plus years. It should have like really, I feel like the soundtrack should have matched that, the energy of that moment. And it was just kind of like goofy. Like it was like the Obi-Wan running away in like this little like sauntering Danny Elfman-esque tone. And like that to me just didn't mesh right. I feel like it needed something very different for that scene.
You know what it reminded me of? Whenever a baseball team does Star Wars night and they promote it, they're not legally allowed to use the Star Wars music. So they use like public domain rip-off Star Wars like tones. Yes. That's kind of what it sounds like, where it just feels this is like Star Wars adjacent to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird because we're gonna get Duel at some point. They're gonna play that song, you're gonna hear the choir.
Yes.
It's going to happen because they've teased it so much. Like, I'd be shocked if it didn't happen. And it's going to be weird to try and jump into that from what we hear now. It's just odd. Like, I don't know what it's just so strange. I don't need the Force theme. I don't need, like, traditional themes. Like, I don't need them. But it keeps sounding like we're about to get them, and then we don't. And it's so – and maybe it's a Star Wars fan thing. Maybe not, like novice fans don't realize that. I don't know. I'd be very curious to hear what people say. But for me – as a big Star Wars fan, I keep waiting for it, and it's so much that it distracts me. I'm like, wait, what the fuck? Like, what is this now? Like, when you hear those certain musical cues and you're trained to that with Star Wars, which is kind of funny because there's one familiar musical cue in this show, and it's the Bounty Hunter musical cue when Flea was on screen. That's the Mandalorian like Bounty Hunter sounds that they do, which is kind of cool. They're making like a constant. I'm like pretty sure it's similar, and so when they had that, like, I have that kind of emotional connection to the show, but everything else, like, it's weird. I'm like, oh, this is familiar. And then you go, no, it's not. I don't know what this is.
Just off putting. I don't know how to put it, but like, I think that you need the musical energy to match the moment you're in. And like, for us, I think too, with as far as the prequels go, the entire climax of the prequels, right? It was Obi-Wan fighting Anakin and like Anakin becoming Darth Vader. Like that was the buildup of essentially six movies worth of shit. And like the actual song, like I believe it's Battle of the Heroes, like that lives up to that hype and then some. And then like we're getting now this rematch between them after 10 years. I feel like it's supposed to be that, not maybe exactly Battle of the Heroes, but it's got to be close and like can't be what it was. And like even just the moment of Darth Vader like torturing him and burning him across the thing, be like, now your suffering begins or whatever. Like, dude, this has got to be a darker side. The soundtrack's got to match this, man. That's a big fucking moment. And just, I don't know, didn't live up to it. I did love the guest spot from oh shoot, I forget her name now. I almost said Indira Varma. The girl from the woman from Rome and Game of Thrones as well. She's a very good actress. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was really good as that Imperial double agent. And oh, Quinlan Vos, we almost forgot to mention. Quinlan Vos, great character from the Clone Wars, making an appearance apparently.
Well, I think it's gonna be O'Shea Jackson Jr.
That would make sense. Yeah,
I saw that posted all over Twitter with that.
Yeah,
with
that, like, I actually didn't. I haven't like really dove into spoiler.
I saw it on a few accounts.
We haven't seen him teasing anything yet. Did we see Kumail? We did. We'd seen Kumail in the lead up. We've seen him. He makes sense. He'd be Quinlan Vos. Like that would make complete sense. Which if you know who Quinlan Vos is,
such a good character.
Go to YouTube, type it in. You'll figure it out from there. That'd be cool from the play that, because like O'Shea Jackson, he's such a I could talk to him. He's such a Star Wars guy. Like, that's a cool character to debut in if that's him. Kendrick, you talked about the boys last week. You did, right?
Yeah, I think you touched on it briefly. Just it's awesome. First three episodes, I believe, are out now. Make sure you watch it because it's only gonna get crazy. I think it's the best season of the show so far. And plus, I got to watch it now in full viz outside of previz. Right. They gave us an updated copy, so I watched the full season in that, and it's even better, obviously. But yeah, great, great series.
I did start Stranger Things. I don't have much to say on it.
Me too.
Right now.
I got like 4 or 5 episodes deep in it.
Yeah, I don't have much to say on it yet because I need to watch more. I've only watched 2. It's great. Like
How great is that creature? The Vanka or whatever.
It's
scary as shit in that first episode.
I like it. I won't say much. I'll say more next week because I'll be fully like through it or whatever by next weekend. So I'll say more. But I started it. I did like 5 watches of recaps on YouTube. I watched like 5 different recap videos because I didn't remember shit. Mm. I remember nothing from this show. I actually was a point where I forgot if I'd even seen the last season. So I did some recap watches. I'd highly suggest it because it is good. Like it's there. The hype around it is not. It's justified. It's definitely justified. So we'll talk more about it when we rip through it next weekend. First trailer we'll talk about though, Pinocchio.
The Disney Plus entry of Pinocchio over the last year.
Another Pinocchio. Nice. It's another fucking Pinocchio movie. Go watch the Pauly Shore Pinocchio movie if you get a chance.
Go to.
This looks awful.
Okay. You see, I thought you guys were going to say that this looked good.
No, I think it's fucking awful, which is a shame because I don't love Pinocchio. So When You Wish Upon a Star, I think is a goated song. I think that's that's it. And maybe if you haven't been to Disney, maybe it's not. I don't know. I, as someone who's been to Disney, probably less people think I've been to Disney, but I've been to Disney enough times. I like Disney. That song is goosebump inducing. It's one of those things where like you get lost in the world of going to Disney World, no matter how, you know, say what you want about Disney and, you know, Disney people. But when you go with your family and you have memories, you enjoy it. When You Wish Upon a Star with Fireworks app, it's awesome. It's an awesome song. So for me, that's like, I think it is the best Disney song. So hearing that in the trailer, I was like, oh, this is great. I think Jiminy Cricket looks cool. But voiced, by the way, by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But I don't know, man. Everything else was just, I don't know. I just can't look at anything but it looks like an SNL version of Geppetto played by Tom Hanks. Like it just doesn't work, which is crazy because he's so good at playing old white dudes. Because he is an old white dude.
Hey, guy's Italian. Pinocchio, Geppetto's Italian. Let's be clear.
That's true. He's an old, but yes, old Italian dude in this sense. But like, it doesn't work. I don't know what it is. Maybe it works in the movie, but the man, when he's fucking wishing upon that star in the trailer and they got the profile shot of him looking out the window, it just doesn't look right. It looks, you know what it looks like? It looks like he's doing the NBC live, live NBC version of Pinocchio that they do during the summer, like once a year, like when Allison Williams played Peter Pan. Like it just doesn't, something is off about this. I'm not like bummed. I'm not like disappointed. But it's definitely, oh man, this could be a real stinker. This could be bad.
I don't think Tom Hanks was necessarily the right choice for this. And no. I'm almost looking forward to it because I think this is going to be a year of quite bad Tom Hanks roles between this and that Baz Luhrmann Elvis movie. So I just think, I don't know. I think he's been on like a weird stretch of movies. I think, okay. So what was it? The Mr. Rogers movie was very good. He was awesome in that.
Very good. Yeah.
He was awesome in that. But like outside of that, News of the World, The Post, like a lot of his movies recently, just not really up to par for Tommy Boy.
He did that. He did those two Apple Plus or Apple TV movies too. He did the Greyhound. Yeah. And then he did the one where he had the robot dog.
The robot guy. Yeah. And like neither of those like are, I wouldn't say any of them are like bottom barrel, like The Circle bad, but like also The Circle, add that to this list. But like none of them are particularly good. I like Pinocchio's a story where I don't think Pinocchio really makes it move for me at all. Like there's nothing to it really for me besides the actual animated thing. I don't think it's something that necessarily screams this needs a live action adaptation. Like I would have even said Lion King deserved it more than Pinocchio, even though Lion King turned out to be a flop. Not financially anyway, but like, I don't know. Nothing about this interests me. And that's fine. I feel like there's kids that'll probably watch this and love it. And that's what it's built for. So that's something where it's like, we're going to have to eat crow on that eventually anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's bizarre the amount of Pinocchio talk we've had to endure on this podcast.
Too much.
I feel like every week there's been a new announcement, a new trailer.
Too much Pinocchio.
Yeah. And in fairness, you know what? And Kenjack, you and I both like bonded over the fact that we just thought the Elvis trailer was terrible. Hearing some good things about it.
They're nothing but good things. I don't believe a word of it.
I don't think I'll like it either. I want to. Maybe I will. But I'm with both of you. Here's the problem with me is Robert Zemeckis is an iconic director. I mean, you make Back to the Future and you do Forrest Gump. I mean, this guy's made so many good movies. But the last we're coming up on almost 20 years. This fucking bizarre boner that he has for weird animation has to fucking stop.
They made fun of that in Chippendale too.
Right, exactly. No, yeah. It's been around so long, it's been parodied. But it's now he's done with Beowulf and Marsney's Moms. Yeah. And now he's doing this thing where he takes dolls, inanimate objects, because maybe he's made one in between. His last movie was that masterpiece, Welcome to Marwen. Which was
he made The Witches. Now The Witches was the last.
Yeah, one. Another
Which
bad one.
Which was awful. Which
and
was
so was so one. Was Allied, the movie that broke up.
Brad Pitt,
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah,
wow, he's had a
tough stretch.
It's tough stretch, and even some of those movies I just named, like I like Polar Express, despite the weird, creepy animation. But like, I just don't get. It's a 20-year obsession that he has with motion capture that I just don't get. Like you are so much better than this. And I'm with you. And I think this going to Disney Plus, Chippendale was awesome, but this Zemeckis Tom Hanks movie going to Disney Plus, that's a bad sign to me. Because they were adamant for a long time, we are not putting our major releases on Disney Plus. And the first one that they put on that service was, I believe, Artemis Fowl, which is one of the 10 worst movies I think I've ever seen. Yeah, and now we have this. So
this was planned though all along for Disney Plus.
Okay, it's possible. This, and look,
if I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this was planned.
Along. I think you're right. Yeah.
Which is, I don't know which ones are supposed to go, but there are a couple. But like the very 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 forgettable, I believe Justin Theroux movie, The Lady and the Tramp.
Mm.
Was he in that? I might have made that up.
I don't think that stuff went straight to Disney Plus. I don't think that was in theaters.
Yes, he played the tramp.
You know what would make this movie?
That was always intended to be Disney Plus too. Yeah.
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 You know what make this movie immediately so much better is if there was a rival puppet maker across the street by the name of Jeff Dunham. And he had his own rival puppets, including Enzo the Dead Sicilian or something like that. And his own little cadre of super villain, or what was his other ones besides
Ahmed the Dead Terrorist?
Yeah, who's now Enzo the Dead Sicilian? But who would be the next one?
Is it now? Did he change? Oh, there's what was the other one? Peanut, right? Was a popular?
Oh, was that the old guy?
Peanut was the was like the purple monster.
Okay. I don't like that one. Puppets are so weird, dude.
Wait, imagine that changed. He changed Ahmed the Dead Terrorist to a. Are you making that up?
No, I made that up. That was completely. I'm saying for the case of his appearance in Pinocchio.
That up. Oh, okay. I didn't catch up on that either, Jeff.
That's amazing. No. I was like, wait a second. He. did he retire Ahmed?
He probably might not.
Does that not sound like something that would happen, though?
God, I don't think anyone that voluntarily goes to a Jeff Dunham concert gives a fuck about like political correctness at all. Like, I don't think he needs to.
You know what's weird, though? I thought he did retire it. That's why I was like, oh, he turned into a Sicilian guy?
No, Enzo the Dead Sicilian. Now I got to look up his other puppets. Or most Terry Faders. I couldn't name you one of his.
I just looked it up. First thing that comes up was Trump's inauguration predicted by Ahmed the Dead Terrorist. The internet stinks.
Do you remember? You know what movie, though, he was actually in? I can't remember where he was. I thought he was funny. And I'm not sure what you guys think of this. Was Dinner for Schmucks.
Dinner for Schmucks.
I'm not a big Dinner for Schmucks. We've talked about
this. I actually like Dinner for Schmucks.
There's a lot of people who do.
Yeah, and the fact that he had a puppet who was just like – shit, it was like his wife who was shit talking him the entire time, like calling him a limp dick motherfucker basically the entire movie. I thought that was funny.
That was there's a weird crew for like Octavia Spencer was one of that grouping in Dinner for Schmucks.
Zach Galifianakis. There was somebody else I'm leaving out too.
There's Patrick something. I always forget his name. But he's like a small actor in like almost every movie.
Chris Van Dowd, what's his name?
Yeah, so Chris Dowd was one of them.
Yeah, he was the blind swordsman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know,
problem with that movie is that the dinner is really funny and everything else is like it takes 2 hours to get there for some reason.
Not that funny, I'm looking at the list of Jeff Dunham's puppets. I didn't realize you had this one. Jose Jalapeno.
We did a thing with when we were doing our fictional debate series during COVID where I tried to get like fake Jeff Dunham stuff to do cameos for us. And so I really went through the whole library of Jeff Dunham characters. The bad run for Zemeckis. I mean, The Witches, Welcome to Marwen, Allied, The Walk, which was fine, but there's a documentary that's significantly better.
Man on Wire is
way top better. Flight. I never really liked Flight.
I like Flight.
I find Flight hard to watch too. I'm not a big flyer. I don't love flying. A Christmas Carol, Beowulf. Oh,
bad. Real bad.
Oh, Polar Express. I don't love Polar Express. I think the Josh Groban song is awesome. The most memorable thing about Polar Express is the meme. Should I put on Mo Bamba or Sicko Mode?
Yeah. I forgot. Nerdy Kid.
Yeah. What Lies Beneath? Bad. Castaway, really great movie. Contact is, you know what? Contact's not amazing, but Contact gets a pass. Forrest Gump. Then we start to get. I mean, honestly, if we're talking like two best Zemeckis movies, it might be Back to the Future and then Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Mm. God, I fucking love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. What a before its time movie. Bob Hoskins, rest in peace.
Tough couple decades for the Z-Man.
Bad.
I mean, I would say really, if you're talking great movies, the last one there is probably Castaway. I mean, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Next up, trailer for the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which will now be starring Rachel Zegler, who was in West Side Story, follows the story of a young President Snow as he develops feelings for the female District 12 tribute during the 10th Hunger Games. This is a book, and apparently it sucks ass. I wouldn't know. Everyone says the book sucks. I don't know. What I do know is I like one of the Hunger Games movies a lot. I love Catching Fire. It's like a hot take of a mainstream movie. I think it's legitimately a great movie. I love the characters. Jeffrey Wright, awesome. Great Philip Seymour Hoffman role. He's so like, it's a perfect, like very quiet, like his character almost reminds me of his character from Mission Impossible 3, by the way, which is like a cool villain. The Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2 are tough. I don't think they're awful, but I just don't love them. The first one was weird. The directing was so shaky cam and like odd. But it's fine. I love Catching Fire. I don't know. I would like for this to be good. I like The Hunger Games is an inherently cool universe with really cool concepts and bright colors, but also like some areas it's not like the contrast of the world of The Hunger Games, I think, is really cool. And I'll always welcome more of it. I just don't know. Also, no franchise loves more loves to do a teaser trailer more that's just the reveal of a logo than the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Unreal. The Hunger Games, if you told me they released a teaser, I would have put money on it. I actually didn't know there was a teaser, and I said, this is going to be a fucking logo that gets a cool 3D animation and is revealed. Like, that's I don't know what it is, but about that IP, they fucking love logo reveals. So it's not really a teaser, but yeah, that's the news on that. I don't know. We'll see. I've heard the book is bad, so not a great sign.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those things where now I think the movies have outpaced the books to a sense where like the books are obviously like a huge cultural phenomenon and all that, like in the same way that Harry Potter was. But I do think that like more people know it from the movies than they do from the book, if that makes sense. So I don't think if necessarily the book is a huge indicator on whether or not it's going to be good. Personally, like Hunger Games, like I agree with you in that I think the world itself is cool. Like that dystopian future is interesting. I think that the actual execution of it was very YA, which makes sense because it is a young adult series, whatever, that's fine. I would rather see a version of the Hunger Games universe that is like more, not like R-rated, but like I would like to see like the true actual like really bloody grittiness of this because it should be like way scarier than I think it actually is. It should be like fucking the most dangerous game shit. Like, but I think there is obviously a watered down element to it, which is fine because again, that's who it's the movie isn't built for full grown ass adults versus like the YA audience the books are built for. Not super excited, but I would say like this is almost on the level of like, what was it the House of the Dragon with Game of the Thrones, where it's like something like no one really knows a bunch about, but they're getting a late sequel to see how they can shake it out. So I don't know. I like Rachel Zegler a lot, so I'm willing to give it a chance for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
quickly, Chris, before you go, I just want to, before you make your point, I just want to note breaking news. Best villain at the MTV Movie Awards. Colin Farrell, the Batman. Willem Dafoe, Spider-Man No Way Home. Victoria Pedretti from You. James Jude Courtney as Michael Myers from Halloween Kills. And Daniel Radcliffe, The Lost City. Daniel Radcliffe took home the award. Congratulations to Daniel Radcliffe on taking on Best Villain. Which I forgot was a movie until just now.
Yeah, he was a pretty good villain for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I didn't think that would win. That is an award show that Spider-Man would sweep up, but yeah, sure.
He had a great line in that movie where he's like, I want you to kill that man creatively.
Yeah,
that was fun. Yeah, he was having fun with that. No, with this, look, I was never a big Hunger Games guy, and that was like my demographic at the time. I think I was 16 when the first Hunger Games came out. That first movie has so much fucking shaky cam with the so action. Much. It drove me nuts.
Which they changed director from first to second.
Right, and it improved a lot. And you're right. I think generally speaking, the second one is the most well received by far. But like, I can't give an analysis. They showed a fucking logo, so I don't know how good the movie looks, but. I think beyond that, I don't think this is going to do that well because the Hunger Games peaked with Catching Fire and the two movies that came after it did not do nearly as well as the first two did. I just don't think there's much of a demand for this. And I don't think we've reached that like Avatar nostalgia window where people who grew up on these movies are now like excited again to watch them. I love Rachel Zegler, but I think the whole young adult craze was a early, I guess it was actually started probably, you could say it started with Harry Potter, but it was a 2000s to mid 2010s trend that I don't think it's going to continue here. Unless, of course, it's really good. I mean, who thought Top Gun Maverick was going to be a potentially billion-dollar movie?
That's true.
They rarely turn out, I feel like, YA properties to be good movies, like whether it's Maze Runner or what was the fucking the one?
Divergent.
Divergent. That's always the one I would never forget.
The biggest pathetic series ever.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they very rarely they pan out. And both of those are almost in the same realm of like dystopian futures, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's usually pretty low success rate, but obviously Hunger Games massively financially successful. So
yeah, Maze Runner I didn't mind. I remember thinking Maze Runner had
Maze Runner the Jack fart trials. Remember that
the death cure in theaters is the longest we've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Dylan O'Brien, so I remember thinking those they were okay. But yeah,
it was 2 hours and 20. It was the longest 2 hours and 24 minutes of my life. And okay. It's not even like a 0 out of 100 for like it's just we sat there we were like holy fucking shit. You're like, what the fuck? That's all we were doing is we were just watching movies at that point because we weren't at Barstool yet. And you're like, Jesus Christ. Also, Wes Ball, the director of Maze Runner, was college roommates with Barry Jenkins.
Really?
The director of Moonlight.
Yes. What a weird combination. And also the director of Lion King Part 2, whenever that comes out.
Yes, which is always interesting. And if Bill Street could talk. I mean, Barry Jenkins has only... And
great.
There's a really... You can watch it. I think you can see it on YouTube, called Medicine for Melancholy, with the comedian Wyatt Cenac. It's the first movie that Barry Jenkins did. I would highly suggest it. That is also on movierankings.net. Fully updated, by the way. We were like a week behind because I was very busy. But yeah, Barry Jenkins is only bangers. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. That Lion King Part 2. I love that though. That's such a challenge when you release Moonlight. If Beale Street could talk, I'm telling you, check out Medicine for Melancholy. Mm. When you're only releasing just like heaters, and then you got to do Lion King live action Part 2.
Small production heaters too.
One of the
biggest fucking productions you can possibly have.
There's a bunch of like Barry Jenkins interviews on YouTube, like long ones that I've listened to. He is, he might be my favorite director just to listen to talk. He's just like, he's an awesome visionary. He's a dream interview for me. I would love to hear movies.
One of the biggest directing power couples ever, him and Lulu Wang,
mm-hmm.
who did The Farewell, among many other things.
The Menu, starring Ralph Fiennes, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Nicholas Hoult. It's theaters in November. Trailer for this. Very interesting trailer. Like, really good Loved trailer. A young couple travels to a remote island to eat at an exclusive restaurant with a chef who prepared a lavish menu with some shocking surprises. That's like a pretty horrible fucking synopsis. I do better than that.
This guy's got a menu.
It's a molecular gastronomy menu, one of those like crazy menus. Is treated as conceptual art, but his approach to cuisine is some shock. Jesus fucking Christ, can we at least tell the story a little bit? What's about anyway? It's a fucking wild ass movie, looks crazy.
Yeah, I think we're gonna get people getting eaten in this, and that's something that always plays, especially after like Fresh was so good, by the way. More people got to watch that on Hulu, Sebastian Stan movie. I thought that trailer was sick. I mean, it's Nicholas Hoult and who's opposite?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy. And obviously two massively talented young actors right there. Ralph Fiennes, probably one of the most legendary older generation of actors there is. Like, what could go wrong, right? Like, that's just such a great combination of human beings. It has to work.
Yeah, it was hard for me to really decipher what this thing was about. But, man, when in doubt, just look at the cast. I mean... Ralph Fiennes, Nicholas Hoult, Anya Taylor-Joy, that's three actors who not only are very famous, but are pretty consistent with their roles in terms of the projects they take on. Nicholas Hoult, I feel like he should be a bigger actor than he is. Like, he's already like pretty relatively famous, but I've liked him in pretty much everything I've seen him in. I mean, I am looking forward to this. I'm intrigued by it. I want to see another trailer just to get a better semblance of the story. But
people be like chasing the woods and shit. Yeah. It's crazy looking. And Ralph Fiennes in any villainous role. Yes, please.
Yeah. No,
you know what? What Nicholas Hoult movie I was watching recently because it came on TV was just Jack the Giant Slayer. I think forget he had like a weird string of movies like before he like hit his bigger break, and then he's been in stuff like The Favorite. He was awesome in The Great. He's such a great actor in that. No pun intended. Like so many other things. Obviously Mad Max. Like he's just he's awesome. Obviously, and so is Anya Taylor-Joy. And you know what movie this? Every time I see Ralph Fiennes, it immediately makes me want to rewatch In Bruges. Because his role in that is one of the funniest bit like pound for pound characters maybe ever. It fucking kills. He kills me in that movie.
And lastly, Sony got catfished into re-releasing Morbius.
Made $85 at theater.
What a fucking losers. Joke, dude. What an insane joke. Morbius has been memed a lot. And it's a joke of like, it's Morbin time. It's like, and they want him to say it in a sequel. They want them to re-release it and have him say it's Morbin time. Jared Leto even got in on the joke and was reading like a script. So, you know what? Shout out to Leto. He gets a lot of shit, but at least he ate it and played along. So they re-released it because people were talking about it. Like, oh, fuck, maybe the second time around people watch it. And I tweeted, I quote tweeted, and I will know. Somebody said, you stole it. I don't know. Other people must have tweeted it before me, but I said, did Sony get catfished into releasing Morbius? I couldn't actually, I just thought it was a joke story that they were re-releasing. I was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And then turned off like 2 days later, made like $85,000. And it's like it got catfished. They did get catfished into re-releasing Morbius, which has to be so exhausting. It's like, God damn it, man. Just put it to bed. Get rid of it already.
Well, you see, that's what scared me, Jeff, is I thought, and that's why I tweeted, this isn't funny anymore, because what worried me is that in this age of everything's got to be ironic and quirky, people are ironically going to go see the movie, and studio executives are going to, because studio executives are stupid, we're going to say, this thing got a second life. Let's revamp this universe. Now, thankfully, it was all a joke. It was all a joke to just like see if they could grow the popularity and then never go back to see the movie. You know what's so bizarre? And the one thing I said in our review for Morbius is I wish I would have hated it more, because its biggest problem is that it's the single most pathetic movie ever. I don't even think it's really that awful. Like, I don't like Catwoman, Batman and Robin, Fantastic Four, like those are awful fucking superhero movies. This one's just forgettable. And it's, I wonder if this is going to get some cult like Second Life.
Following. I don't think so.
I think it's dead.
I think
Morbius is the dead vampire, no longer the undead vampire.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's it was a truly weird story. And I wonder if the re-release included the, stupid, I don't think we talked about this, the Michael Keaton, how they cut out the, I think it has something to do with Spider-Man, line in theaters. I mean, just a movie that was made with absolutely zero like love or intent. It was just a movie trying to start a universe. So
yeah, I've never walked out of a theater faster in my life. Like when I tell you I was, my ass was up before, as the credits were rolling, I was like, get me the fuck out of here. What the fuck?
Yeah.
I was YouTubing the post credits thing. I know they already leaked on there. I was like, this is exhausting movie. Yes. This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is brought to you by Manscaped. That's right. Father's Day right around the corner. Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. It's a perfect bundle for the men in your life. The old lawnmower 4.0, all new skin safe electric trimmer. Got the weed whacker, nose hair trimmer. Remember, don't pick your nose hairs. You could die. Crop preserver, anti-chafing ball deodorant, crop reviver ball spray toner. That stuff is great. Which I don't know. They should just rebrand that a little. Just call it like a deodorant 2, because that's what it feels like. Maybe I'm using it wrong. Performance boxer briefs and a travel bag, which is always great. A good travel bag for all your shit is awesome. Lawnmower 4.0. It's waterproof as well, so you can shave in the shower and all that. Dads love the comfort. Be like, hey, dad, here you go. Shave your balls. Also, nose hair. Dads
love shaving nose hair.
And they really need to shave the nose hair.
Yeah.
And the ear hair. And ear hair is sneaky, significantly more repulsive than nose hair.
Agreed.
Like way, like you're, it's great. Yeah. I Manscaped's great. I mean, I've been on the subscription for just the ball toner for like 2 years now. 20% off free shipping with the code LIGHTS, LIGHTS at manscaped.com. It's 20% off for free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code LIGHTS. Look, it's beach season, you know. I don't know. Probably want to.
You don't want that popping out of your thong, okay?
Nah,
if you're out there wearing Speedo, you don't want your pubes popping out.
All right. Interview Thomas Jane. Then we come back from that interview. Everything Everywhere All at Once. All right. We are joined for the first time on this podcast by one Mr. Thomas Jane. How's it going? You just told us you're in France. That made us feel we're in regular old New York and you're in very nice France, I assume.
Yeah, I'm in the southwestern part of France. It's very country. It's absolutely gorgeous.
I could
very only jealous.
It's luckily it's not like the dead of winter in New York, so my jealousy is not as bad. But yeah, we're up there. We got a lot to talk about today, but let's get into Troppo right off the top. For those who don't know, series, by the way, debuted on Australian TV, but you can stream it now through Amazon Freevee on Prime Video. Series centers on a disgraced cop who's recruited by an eccentric private investigator with a criminal past. As they try to uncover the whereabouts of a missing Korean family man and tech pioneer, they discover a string of bizarre deaths. The mismatched duo was thrust into a fight for survival and sanity in the wilds of far north Queensland. Check it out now. I will say off the top, you wear an absolutely fantastic hat in this series, but kind of a twist The classic Private Eye story with you know, I'm a retired retired kid kind of cop, right?
I like to think that, you know, I did a show called The Expanse. It's on Amazon now, and I got to play a private dick who on Ceres, right? Like they colonized space and had a blast with this sort of noir throwback detective in space. And I like to think, you know, that show takes place, you know, a good 300 years in the future. So I like to think that one of the inspirations for the character of Joe Miller was watching an ancient television show called Trapo.
That's got to be, because we're going to, like, I was going to ask next, like, did you have any detective or cop movies that you loved growing up? But it's, I feel like that's got to be nice when you can almost have a character from your past, like, oh, I can almost string this together a little bit, tie it in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, of course, I'm a big noir fan. So I love all the old Humphrey Bogart detective stuff. And of course, there's Kiss Me Deadly. There's some real classic detective yarns that you don't see too much anymore. When I was a kid, I used to watch Mike Hammer, Stacy Keach. Stacy Keach did a great take on the old Mike Hammer novels. It's called Mike Hammer. And I got a real kick out of that as a kid. I probably watched every one of those. So, but yeah, I, for some reason, I play a lot of detectives lately. you know, when great material comes my way, I gotta listen. And it just so happens that the last two television things, The Expanse and Trapo, are both me playing detectives.
They're like far worse types of characters for people to want to play the detectives. Though that's like a, that's like, it's a good, you could, yeah, like dopey best friend is not quite as glamorous as like detective. That's a pretty nice one to continue to have, having to do.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. You know, this character's a mess. He's a detective, but he gets accused of this terrible crime, and it's the kind where people start camping out on your lawn and following your kids to school, and you're all over social media. So he disappears, just packs up his old Peugeot and takes off as far north Queensland as you can get, where it's really hot. You know, in the States, south is hot. There, it's north. And this is the northernmost part that you can get in Australia. And Trapo, you know, they got a word for when the heat drives you nuts. It's called going Trapo. So that's our title. So everybody's a little bit half-baked up there. And he just wants to disappear and hope that he grows a beard, and he hopes that nobody recognizes him. But of course they do. And he gets involved with this crazy lady, Amanda, played by Nicole Shimon. And those two characters couldn't be more opposite from each other, and that was the fun. You know, she knows nothing about how to do detecting work. You know, he's a pro. She's out of her mind. He just wants to die. You know, he's sort of lost everything. So it makes for some good drama. The Australian author Candace Fox wrote the script. She wrote the novel called Crimson Lake. If anybody's into detective novels, this is a real good one called Crimson Lake by Candace Fox. And that's where we took all the good stuff and turned it into a show.
Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of the reviews have been, I'd say, overwhelmingly positive so far. But like, as an actor, do you ever get nerves doing an adaptation like that? Because fans, especially fans of books and other things, like, they can turn into real assholes if adaptations don't go the exact way that they wanted
to. Yeah, that's always a big concern, especially for me, you know. And this is our first, as a producer, I started a company called Renegade with my partner, Courtney Penn. And this is the first television project that we got off the ground. And so our job as producers was really to protect the material. you need to, you know, television, look, it's tough, you know, when you make that transformation from page to screen, there's a lot that can go wrong. And you can't cram in the whole novel, right? You got to kind of take the highlights, and which highlights you choose is the difference between the fans getting real pissed off, you know, or not, and how much you change. We had to change the actual, some of the crimes that we were investigating. We had to shuffle some stuff around, but we kept the relationship between Amanda and Ted intact, and those characters, you know, that's what people loved about the book, was Ted and Amanda. And we guarded those jealously, and made sure that we were being true to the book. And you're absolutely right. And they have every right to be pissed off. You know, I've been pissed off. Some of my favorite novels get turned into movies, and it's just like, well, what novel were they reading?
That was with Harry Potter. Don't worry.
Well, like that, I kind of want to follow on that, because I mean, geez, you think about just even some of the most iconic stuff, like Dune remade or made again,
right?
You know, this past fall by Denis Villeneuve, and he split it up, you know, much different than the David Lynch one. For you, like, when you're looking at a book, and it's, I feel, probably a little different creating a series opposed to a movie, like, what is the process? Do you sweep through and pick out the most important things and then kind of scale down from there? Or like, what is it about finding the right amount from the book to adapt? Because obviously you can't do everything. It just isn't possible.
You got to take the highlights, you know. It's like, even when you read a 350 page novel, you know, and then you try to tell your friend about it, you can tell them about it in about 2 minutes, you know, the basic story, and then you say what you loved about it, and, you know, and why you thought it was great. And you take that essentially and work from there, you know. We're getting picked up for another season, and right now Candace's second book is called Redemption Point. And right now we're going through the same sort of hustle, where we're trying to say, listen, you know, let's protect this material. And that's an art, you know. I mean, a lot of writers, screenwriters, they kind of want to reinvent stuff, and sort of the old expression is pee on it. When writers come in, they want to pee on it. And, you know, we just kind of keep, you know, go pee over there. You know? Let's, this story is great. It's not broken. Don't fix it. So that's always a struggle. And now I can see why, you know, I go, some of these movies don't work out from these novels. I see why.
But ours like a very, did. Sorry. People, yeah. Digging it. It does seem like a very difficult process, I would say, trying to adapt it, especially when it's something that's very highly sought after. Like, sometimes you'll adopt, or you can adapt a book that's like pretty old, or just like it isn't really in the public eye. But when it's something that like is currently or very recent, people like have that recency bias. And if you can't match that exact standard that they have in their head for it.
And everybody's got a slightly different version of the book, right? When you read something, you know, that's the great thing about novels, is it's a movie that you make up in your head, given a set of instructions, and you make it up in your mind, you know, and your mind stitches together the story from the novel. And really good novelists can help you stitch something really specific together. Bad novelists, you're like, fuck, I got to make up this whole thing if I'm going to make it interesting. And then there's tone, you know, I've had the good fortune to do 3 Stephen King projects now. That's a hard nut to crack. He's such a great writer, but you see, you know, more often than not, people kind of miss the boat on that. But when they hit it, you can feel Stephen King's imagination or voice come through even in a film. And that's a testament to a great writer.
I'm glad you mentioned some of those adaptations, because I know that one that you were in that blew my mind when I was younger was The Mist. And I think that, you know, that movie, you were the subject of arguably the most brutal movie ending of all time. I would love to know just like what your reaction was when you read that for the first time.
Oh, I loved it. You know, I'm a big King fan, and along with everybody else, I'd read most of his stuff. By the time I got The Mist, I'd read all those short stories from that book and most of his novels. And, you know, the dude's the greatest writer of the fucking century, man. He's just fantastic. They'll be studying Stephen King 100 years from now, I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm. He's an absolute monster. Greed.
He's not, you know, that successful for nothing.
Yeah.
And what's brilliant about it is it is popular. It's populist. You know, it's a populist. It's like anybody can understand it. It doesn't talk over anybody's head. It talks right down into your guts. So, you know, I remember I read the script Darabont sent me and I said, wait a second. Is that how that short story ends? Because that's then I went back and read it. No, totally different ending. And I thought, man, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. Stephen King said to Frank, he said, you know, if I'd have thought of that ending, I'd have done it. So he loved it. And then, of course, the Weinstein Company that was making the movie, Bob Weinstein, he said he'd double our budget if we changed the ending.
Really?
And everybody, you know, and everybody was pretty much in agreement that we didn't want to do that, you know. So we took half the money that we could have got to make the movie. We had enough to make it, you know, but we took half the money that we could have got because we wanted to maintain that ending and keep it.
Wow.
You know, crazy. That's the second time I think that I remember in recent memory hearing about people having like very high, a very good creative sensibility with that sort of thing, especially with dealing with the Weinstein Company, because that's what happened to Bong Joon-ho with Snowpiercer. Like they wanted to constantly cut Bong Joon-ho when he made Snowpiercer with the Weinstein Company. Yeah. There's a bunch of edits that Weinstein, the company wanted to make to the movie. And like, basically Bong Joon-ho just told them to go fuck themselves. He's like, I'm not changing anything about this. Like, if you want to do that, like I do whatever cuts you want to do. Like I'm going to make the movie that I want to make. So it's the second time I've heard about that in recent memory.
Well, he's lucky because most directors don't get that kind of say. You know, the producer says, thank you very much. And now we're going to cut something that we think people can watch.
Exactly.
So he's lucky to have that kind of power. And, you know, the movie did great, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Spun off, too, into a show. There's another role I do want to talk about. And it came up not, I didn't watch it on purpose, but I'm doing a rewatch of a show that I haven't rewatched in quite a long time. And I got into the season 2 episode that you're in, where you play yourself, and that is Arrested Development. And I just had to bring it up. Is that, where does that rank in terms of roles that people bring up to you? Does that get brought up to you now and then? Do people say, I just want my kids back to you on the street?
I sure do. They sure do. Yeah. It is one of the things that people mention quite often. Yeah, for some reason people love that episode. It's a great show. The rest of the Development is great, but for some reason they just love that. I never really could figure it out, but it's fun. It's nice to be, you know, it's nice for people.
But another one I do want to bring up too, because you mentioned adaptations, and I've read plenty of interviews, so I won't make you rehash you know, I'm sure you get the question a lot. Would you play The Punisher again? Would you do this? Would you do that? But I'm curious more in your eyes, because you've mentioned, I've seen you talk about in interviews that you think that character hasn't fully been fleshed out and looked at in a way that truly honors that character. Do you think, though, and I assume you don't regret taking the role, but do you wish that that role had maybe come down the line 10 years later? Because, I mean, obviously now, 2004 was just when comic book movies were starting to really be taken serious at a different level. And especially Punisher is a little more along the lines of like, you know, a Hugh Jackman Logan or like a more serious type thing. Do you wish it was a role that you'd been in?
No, it wasn't. That's the way it should have been. And I fought like hell to get the more of the, you know, I felt that movie should have been like Taxi Driver. You know, you really see a guy who loses everything. And, you know, of course, he's a ex-military and he starts taking it out on bad guys, you know. But I saw a guy who was really fucking angry at the world and that people and the system and the way things work, you know, and the original character was written in the 70s when we had movies like Death Wish. And and these kind of pulp novels were very popular. So I saw that as the, you know, and the Tim Bradstreet cover. I turned that movie down twice and they kept going at me. And then I saw the Tim Bradstreet covers and they had such a gritty realism to them. I said, that's it. That's the guy. Like, if we can get close to that, then we're cooking with gas. But I was up against the fact that comic book movies were young and people were still wrestling with the tone of those films. And some people got more caught up in the word comic book. So they felt like things had to be a little over the top and a little, you know, that there was some humorous kind of crap that they put in the Punisher movie that just didn't fit. But my problem was that The Dark Knight had not come out yet. So the world of movies, when you went dark like that, and people didn't, nobody knew that that could be done, essentially. You couldn't make a noir comic book movie. And I was saying, yes, we can. You know, and I people are going to love it. And that's why they love the Punisher. He's the anti-superhero. And that's what makes him cool. And so we got to lean into that all the way, you know, and then we'll have a winner. Nobody listened to me, in my opinion, because Dark Knight hadn't come out yet. Batman, Dark Knight came out, Christopher Nolan's thing, and changed everybody's perception. You know, so essentially he did what I was trying to do and wanted to do with the Punisher, but of course had no power to do that. And I wasn't a producer and I wasn't the director. And so we got what we got, you know. A few years later, I did my short film, Dirty Laundry. Mm-hmm. If anybody hasn't checked it out, go on YouTube. We put it up for free. Go on YouTube and watch Dirty Laundry. Just put it in, Dirty Laundry. So that was my sort of homage to the world of Frank Castle that I, you know, thought that the character could be. I wish that, and I heard that people, when they made the Punisher movie with, I mean, a TV show with Bernthal, who was great, by the way, great Punisher, they still missed it. You know, and Dirty Laundry had come out by then. So, and I heard that people were, you know, they were like, let's do it like Dirty Laundry, which is why it was out there. You know, here, it was a little birthday cake for you. You know, here's a little present. Yeah. Do it like this. People will dig it.
Well, make sure to check that out and make sure also to check out Troppo. Again, if you're listening, it's on Amazon Freeview, which is on Prime Video. I think it's all 8 episodes right out on there now. Make sure to check it out if you want a good private eye story or private dick. I like better. It just sounds cooler. Like the old school, like, yeah, private dick. I like that way more. Actually, I was watching Seven the other day and they refer to them as dicks, which I didn't remember. About that. I didn't remember them referring to the two cops as the Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman as dicks during that movie. But I was like,
That's a full on inspired by film noir detectives. Oh, yeah. By the way, film noir had very few detectives. You know, we make that association, but most of those movies were just about regular deadbeats. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of detective film noirs, but not very many.
Now I'm going to be anyway,
this has got some guts. I like Troppo because we do lean into that sort of, you know, it's got some darkness to it. And I always appreciate that. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, make sure.
Dark guy.
Make sure to just check that out. Well, and you're going to get, I feel like you're going to get darker going back for a season two in that sun too, if anything.
Yeah.
So make sure to check out Troppo. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you. Yeah. Chris,
thanks so much.
Man. You bet. Hey, thanks.
All right. Thank you to Thomas Jane.
Wasn't that cool? He lit up a cigarette in the middle of our interview and just started smoking it. Or maybe it was weed. I really don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was weed. Yeah,
it was fucking really cool.
It was weed.
It was cool as fuck, man. And he was just sitting there like he took like a big ass fucking drag and he's like,
this is not a negative on him. Man. I wouldn't be shocked We cut it out of the interview because there was no reaction. I don't think he remembers he was in Money Plane. And not that he forgot. I could see him having that shot that somewhere and having no idea what he was shooting. Just like a friend. He's like, okay. No, there is an interview. There is an interview where he took it very seriously. So he probably did. But he was he had no reaction. Kelsey Grammer was holy shit. Because it was right with people. When we interviewed Kelsey Grammer, people had been coming up and talking about Money Plane. Thomas James I've never had a single person come up to me and talking about Money Plane.
No one's discussed that in my entire life. The fucking Joey Lawrence movie. He's like, no. People don't come up to me about that. It's usually the Mister or fucking Punisher.
Yeah. Yeah, so thanks to him. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Directed by the directing duo, the Daniels. Daniel Kwan, Daniel Scheiner. The movie came out back in March.
Yeah.
Crazy movie. By at this point, if you're listening to this podcast, you've likely heard us talk about it and have likely heard about Everything Everywhere All at Once just in general. This isn't a surprise review what we're about to say about it. Everyone knows you like this movie. An aging Chinese immigrant is swept up in an insane adventure where she alone can save what's important to her by connecting with the lives she could have led in other universes. It is a multiversal movie starring Michelle Yeoh, Kiwi Kwan, who we interviewed.
Yep.
Please go listen to the interview. It's a great interview. He had some awesome emotional stuff to say about just the Hollywood industry in general, feeling jaded about it, being inspired to come back because of Crazy Rich Asians. He obviously was in The Goonies. He was Short Round in Indiana Jones. Makes a reappearance in movies, which is an awesome reappearance. Stephanie Hsu, who plays the daughter in the movie, which we'll get to in a second. You haven't seen this. It's a spoiler review. At this point, you have to go see it in theaters. I think it's releasing soon, though, on digital. But if you can see it, go see it. Go see this movie. Definitely a movie that's going to be a victim to hype. One of my favorite reviewers on the internet, Cosmonaut Variety Hour, Cosmic Picture Show, Marcus, he said it. He's like, people already saying the movie's overrated. This is a month after it came out. I was people already saying the movie's overrated. That's how you know it's a good movie. It's that hype thing. There's another interview I listened to. I forgot who said it. It was this is one of those movies where you start to worry. It's there's so much hype and it's not really anywhere. Now it is. But you don't want people to go in and have those absurdly stupid expectations. They're okay, this better be the best fucking movie I've ever seen. Which is happening with Top Gun, by the way. Yes. I call it the Slumdog Millionaire effect. Not that Slumdog invented that, but for me, when I associate movies that people didn't see until after it had all the hype, Slumdog will always be that movie for me. This movie's amazing. It's fucking incredible. It is for both myself and Ken Jack a top 100 movie that we've ever seen. It's 69 for me, it's 61 for Ken Jack in terms of ranking. This movie is one of those movies that is the absolute definition of just pure fucking creativity and imagination and finding a way to take what is a very simple concept and story. And I had not really read reviews of this movie because we saw it when it was kind of pumping out anyway. But there were some reviews of the movie that actually really irritated me that were good reviews, but I was I feel like this, you're missing the point of this. Mm-hmm. Very simple concept, the movie. Super, super, super simple in terms of a meaning, in terms of the moral, is super simple. It is a straight up cherishing life movie, right? Wanting to end suffering, wanting to find the meaning of life and cherishing all that. And you can get into what your takeaways, but it's a story that's been told in movies forever and it'll be told forever down the line, but it's told in an incredibly unique and different way over multiple different universes. It's funny that it comes out sandwiched in between Spider-Man and Doctor Strange when it did, because it's a non-IP driven multiversal movie. Mm-hmm. But it is just heartwarming. It's heart wrenching. It's visually stunning to watch. There's some shit in this movie that you watch, you're like, wow, it blows you away, truly. And I just hope it remains in the zeitgeist through the end of the year, because it's a movie that deserves all the credit recognition that it gets. It's one of those movies where you walk out of it, and I felt this way, and this is going to be different because some people don't like this movie, but it's an A24 movie. Whether you liked Uncut Gems or not, it's one of those movies where you walk out of the theater and you went, holy shit, that was an
exhale. Yeah.
You're like, wow, what the fuck? That took me for a trip. Though this one is significantly less divisive than Uncut Gems. But
this movie is everything that I think it should be hyped up for. And I hope people go in with a very open mind and try not to let too much influence them if they haven't seen it yet. It's been out for a while now. I can't say enough good things about it. It truly is. I'd be surprised if it was a better movie this year. Like I really would be. It's a 96 out of 100 for me. I don't give out. I know people think Ken Jack and I only give out 95s or above, but we really don't. It's not often.
Very rare.
I don't give out many 95s. So just to see a movie better than this, I hope. I would love for there to be a better movie than this year, because that means there's great movies. But yeah, it's up there for me.
Real quick, and Ken Jack, I want you to go next. But like, I love the assessment of our rating systems, which is that you guys only give out 95s and above, and I only give lower than 50. like it's like the extremities in terms of like the way that we review movies, I find hilarious.
It is, because like if you take, and granted, this is actually skewed because if you go back, the older movies get on our website, to be fair, because there's a lot to do. We do it manually. The older movies get, like, there are years that we really only pulled the good movies. So yeah, it skews up. If you average out mine and Ken Jack's scores, like all 5,000 movies, it's like right at like a 50. It's like maybe like 53, 54. But again,
that's skewed
because there's just some years where it's like we don't have any bad movies.
You don't want us to like go to 1945 and pull out like Mr. Jenkins Jalopy, a movie that 20 people saw.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I brought that up in the like blog that I wrote about movies from 2008, where like I just remember those movies fondly. Now I'm not going to do a deep dive and watch like, I don't know, what's a fucking random like Stop Loss or some random 2008 movie, just because I have great memories of that year. So like,
we post like our social team, Robbie and Goochman, they've been posting a lot of like anniversary posts for movies. They've been doing great, and they post
so funny out. The responses every
and
time.
It just it cracks me up. And like, I've learned to not get mad about it, but I can't not laugh at it. You gotta at least somebody laugh at it, because then someone's like, dude, they only post good movies. And I reply, I'm like, the fuck do you want us to post? Do you want us to post the movies we don't like?
Yeah, it's the 14th anniversary of The Love Guru.
Trust me, like, I watched The Silk Road like 10 times. I love a good bad movie, but what do you mean to post? Like, you want us to post like the 50s out of 100? Like, why would you want us to post that?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Ken Jack. You saw it first. I assume your opinion hasn't changed at all on this movie.
I just went to go look at what my lowest rated movies from 2008 were. Disaster Movie, 0. Beer for My Horses, 1. Meet the Spartans, 1. And The Happening, 1. All
Disaster
very bad movies.
Bars coming out in the same year is...
Yeah.
That's insane.
But no, that was the height of the Friedberg and Seltzer sensation from, you know, post Scary Movie. But the thing is, I never saw Beer for My Horses, but three of those
Toby Keith and Ted Nugent. It's a classic.
I figured, but three of those four movies, that's the reason I love that year. They are fascinating in how awful they are. Like, they're so reflections of their time and a reflection of those directors. And at least Disaster Artist bombed. Meet the Spartans, I remember doing well. I remember back on Spill.com,
the
website I used to go to. I think it opened in 08. I think it was, I might give you the, I think it was, I'll give you the fucking date. I think it was January 25th, could be wrong, of 2008. And I think it beat out Rambo and Cloverfield in its second
time capsule
and a few other movies. And people were like, what the hell? Like, this movie's garbage. But yeah, at least they were like fascinating in how awful they were.
Man, there's some real bad ones too. Meet Dave. Oh, like fucking.
I forgot.
Guru, like you mentioned before, these are tough.
There should be a president of movies, and every beginning of the year, he or she decides what can get released. Because if I were the president of movies and they were like, hey, here's Disaster Movie and here's Meet the Spartans, I'm like, you got to pick one.
Nope.
You only get one. You can't release both. Well, you got it. It's one or the other.
But the thing is, those movies were made so cheaply that they couldn't.
Oh, Disaster Movie. Do you remember what the Iron Man and Disaster Movie looks like? It's literally
like a Times Square guy.
Yeah. And then he's also in it for 2 seconds because a cow falls on his head. Like, that's the extent of the joke. The other. And Ken Jack, I'll let you get to your review. I'm sorry, but
I love talking movies.
The other movie from 2008 that always stands out to me is Babylon AD.
Oh, sick movie! Fucking Vin Diesel, right?
That was like the last Vin Diesel movie before he's like, I gotta go back to this Fast and Furious shit, don't I? Because he did XXX and he did what was the one he did in between that I can't remember?
Well, like Riddick.
Oh, Riddick, of course, yeah, Chronicles of Riddick, and then he did. On Babylon AD, which is like not a terrible looking movie, but just so absurd. I think I remember the original cut for that movie was like 4 hours. and they cut it down to like 95 minutes. And it's just it's just garbage. But even, I don't know, again, a lot of it's nostalgia, but I just remember being like at that age and being like, oh, there's a charm to this. I mean, even if they're awful. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So anyway, back to Everything Everywhere.
Yeah. Sorry.
Which is, this is a long digression, but anytime I hear like, I want to go look at like a year of movies, I just got to do it. But yeah, I agree with a lot of what Jeff said. And I think that one of the things about going into this movie is like, I really didn't know anything about what was going to go on. Cause like we watched the trailer for it. It's like impossible to digest, like, or figure out what exactly was going to happen in the movie. But I think that it essentially uses the concept of the multiverse to explore multiple storylines, but also multiple genres. And I think that that execution is so goddamn cool because it ended up being like equal parts comedy, family drama, martial arts, sci-fi, action, philosophical. It was like fucking a Nietzsche movie, basically, like fantasy, like arts, like every single genre and more, like all in one. And it's like to the point where it's basically not definable. And I think that you have a lot of other movies that try to blend even just like two or three genres, they can't do it. This blended like a trillion genres and did it perfectly. Like it was flawless in its execution of that, in my opinion. And I think that for me, there's three really huge selling points. And I remember I outlined this in my blog as well. And the first one is that the comedy, I think this movie had some of the best humor of any movie I've seen in a very long time. And like, for whatever reason, and we've talked about this on this show a lot, like a lot of comedy writing has really migrated over to TV. Like it just, there's not really a huge market for that sort of like really good comedy writing in movies. And I think that like this movie made me laugh so much harder than any recent movie I can even imagine. And then I think the original storyline, like if you're one of those people out there that's saying, oh, Hollywood only makes the franchises, they only make remakes, they only make reboots. Like, dude, this is the movie you should be watching. It's fucking so original. It's insane. And like it's not connected to anything. It's independent. It's like everything about it is just it's so remarkable. And I think that if you're one of those people that want something more original, if you support movies like this with your wallet, Hollywood's going to make more of them. A24, like it's their highest grossing movie of all time for a reason. Like it's, and like that's when you get more support of or production companies or distributors, whatever, you get like more financial support for those sorts of movies, more of them get made. And then lastly, I think the third act of this movie is like, it is really just such an emotional ride. And like, not to make it sound too corny, but it makes you like think about your spot in like the universe and all that. There's like a couple lines in it that make me like tear up for sure. I think Ke Huy Quan's delivery of like, in another life, I would have loved to just do taxes with you. Like that, like those lines were, they crushed me. And I think that his back and forth and his chemistry with Michelle Yeoh was awesome. I think Stephanie Hsu was so great as the Jabuki I forget. But like all those bits between that grouping was amazing. And like also the side characters that they had throughout it, like Rakakuni and that guy, like the martial artist that put the dildos up their butts, like all those guys, like every single person had like a tiny part to play and they played it perfectly. Oh, and the guy from fucking I Think You Should Leave, the guy who played like the Santa character was in it randomly. James Hong, yeah. Obviously, like
holy fuck. So I rewatched it today because I felt like I needed to.
Yeah.
That was killing me. I'm like, who the fuck is that again?
Yeah.
As
Crashmore, Detective Crashmore. That was it. But like every guy had like just such a great role to play in this. Like again, like James Hong, one of the best actors that finally just got recognized as a star in Hollywood, even though he has like 500 acting credits. I think everyone had such great moments. I think specifically that third act just goddamn crushed me so bad. And that would be my biggest selling point. Like if you're someone who for some reason hasn't seen it yet, I know it's coming out. I think it's on digital demand now, but you can also like rent it.
I don't think
shit.
It is yet.
It's okay. Yeah. Well, it's coming soon. I know I pre-ordered the Blu-ray because I was like, I want that for my collection ASAP. But like once you can watch it, I would highly, highly recommend watching. It's my favorite movie this year, and I don't really see anything topping it. It's a 97 out of 100 for me. It's a goddamn near perfect movie.
This is always the hard part. This is a really good movie. It's an exceptionally well-made movie. And, you know, I'm interested to know your guys' kind of perspective on this. I think the best director nomination at the Oscars kind of sucks sometimes because I think what they do is they just take the five best movies of the year and say, oh, by the way, these are just the five best directors. The two guys that directed this, I would be shocked if by the end of the year, I don't think that they're one of the five best in terms of a best direction nomination. This movie is original. It's unique. It looks beautiful. I love the acting. I love, like, have these guys direct a superhero movie, because the action and like the combat in this, I think it's fluid. I think it's beautiful. And I the movie's kind
they
of
did superhero much- movie. It's called Swiss Army Man.
Yeah,
oh, that's fair. That's fair. the untold story of the greatest superhero ever, Swiss Army Man. But no, I think that it is so well directed, beautifully acted, beautifully shot. The movie's kind of out of theaters now, but had we have reviewed it earlier, I would have recommended seeing it in theaters. So absolutely, like, completely understand your guys' viewpoint there. And this thing is going to be on a lot of top 10 lists. And, you know, I actually think it came out so early, but the push has been so strong and the longevity has been so strong. I do think this is going to stick and get a fair amount of Academy.
There's a lot of like prestige slop coming out this year. That's my concern with it, but continue. We'll talk about this in a minute because I'm going to pull up a list, but yeah.
True. I don't know if it'll win anything, but I do think it'll get a fair amount of recognition, at least in terms of nominations. So really, basically 95% of what you guys agreed with, or what you guys said I agree with about this movie. I have two big problems with it. One, and it's an issue I have this issue with like every movie, and I hate it. Or not, you know, or not hate it, but I just, I feel like it's maudlin just how consistent I am with this. I thought the movie dragged, man. Holy shit. This thing, because this thing was moving good for the first hour, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And then the final 45 minutes is just multiverse to multiverse to multiverse. So much repetition, in my opinion, from one action sequence to the other. But the big problem I had, because we're in full spoiler territory here, right, Jeff? Like, yeah, I mean, we've been around for a minute. I didn't get the emotional resonance out of this movie that you guys did. And a movie that it reminded me of a little bit, just in the fact that it was totally unique, original, but also a little bit hollow, was The Fifth Element, where you get to the end of The Fifth Element, which is and this movie is better than that, by the way. And it's like, oh, but The Fifth Element is love. And you're like, oh, fuck off. And like, you get to the end of this and the whole message of like, well, we just need to love each other more. I'm like, I appreciated what they were going for, but it did not land for me completely. I think that this is a rock solid movie. I think, no pun intended, considering one of the multiverse sequences in which two rocks talk to each other. I think it's a really good movie. I think that audiences will enjoy it. I think by the end of the year, many people will view it as one of the best films of the year. But it's my rating system is so fucked. Look, it's a 72 for me, but guys, I recommend this. Like, I really, really do enjoy this film.
I can hear the LCB Reddit's fucking typing up right now. They're getting carpal tunnel. They're typing so fast.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. Yeah. I think the emotional part is, I don't know. I guess, man, that it's different for everyone.
And dude, again, that is so personal taste, like completely. Like, yes. When we reviewed West Side Story and there were people who were like, I can't believe Castellani loved this much. Well, it's a remake of a movie I grew up on and a story I grew up on. So when you get to the end, like, of course I'm going to cry.
I get the movie 95. Speaking of getting on 95s.
That's fair. But like, okay. And we're going to get, that's why tonight's draft is perfect, because the movies that move me and make me emotional and make me cry are, it's weird. Like, I cried like four times during the Batman. That's not normal, but I love Batman. And so I have a personal attachment to it. And so when Robert Pattinson went Thursday, October 31st in the Batman voice, yeah, I fucking got tears in my eyes. I'm weird when it comes to that stuff. Really good movie. I recommend it. I really do recommend it to everyone. And beyond that, you brought it up, Ken Jack. If we want to push movies forward, you got to recommend movies like this. Like, this is a totally unique, totally original idea. With great acting, great story, you know, good storytelling, just with a few issues here and there that bothered me, that lowered my ratings, but solid, solid film. I really recommend it. And I'm truly glad that you guys and so many other people have gotten the enjoyment out of it that they have. It's really well made.
Yeah, there's so many things that are tackled in it that like I said, are normal things that are tackled in movies. And there's different things you can pull out of it. Like, I've seen video essays and
thoughts where they, you know, focuses on, you know, dread and suffering. I've read things that focus on the cherishing of life, mental illness. Like it does, it pulls in a lot of various things. And like, again, in simple ways, like it's you, when it's all said and done, you can simply see how it wraps and like what the movie's trying to tell you, where they're trying to tug on your heartstrings with family. And again, accepting the life that's ahead. Like there is a lot of that. It's just wrapped up in a very complex way. On purpose, might I add. Look at the title of the movie. Like the movie is a wacky title on purpose. That's the, by the way, I reference it reviews. Like I've seen some of their like I did see a review. It's like, oh, it's such simple themes that we've seen, but why done in such a confusing way? It's like, I don't know, because maybe they wanted to do it differently. Like, and then we fucking yell about every 5 minutes about movies. Like, it's like,
yeah,
it's intentionally crazy. Like it's not shy about that, which is why I love it. I love that it's unapologetically chaotic, which is, again, why I like Uncut Gems. Significantly different movie.
Jimmy Lee Curtis turns into a WWE wrestler and throws something through a wall. How do you not, at that point, realize
they've got
what's
fucking
happening?
Hot dog fingers. Like, it just butt plugs.
The hot dog fingers universe.
By the way, Raccoonie, by the way, is
so
an all-time voiced by Randy Newman, which is it's a Pixar reference within a Pixar reference. It's fucking incredible. It's just so perfect. There's so much like beautiful like symbolism in the movie, whether like the contrast of the everything bagel, right? Of this black sphere with a white circle in the middle, but then the opposite end of the spectrum being the googly eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Circle, white circle, black in the middle. Like it's got the, and there's so like the circle symbolism, and like I've watched videos that talk about like Buddhism relations to it. Like there's just so many like gorgeous themes with it, but done in such a wild, fun, different and wacky way. And you can pull whatever you want out of it because it's done that way intentionally. I think in the end, there's almost like a freeing thing. Like you said, Kendrick, you watch this and you watch it and you think about your place, right? And whether it's your place with mental health, with family, with job, like it's, I don't know. Like I think it just beautifully opens that up. But again, why it's so good. Plenty of movies have done that. Plenty of movies make you think about things and question things, but it's because it's done in such a fucking fun and wild way. It's one of those movies you see it, at least for me, for what I like, and you go, that's why I go see movies, like for shit like that. Like I fucking love Marvel. I love Star Wars. I love all that. I'd rather see that 100 out of 100 times over any franchise movie. Maybe not Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, or Dune. But other than those two, like that truly is like, this is one of the movies that you're like, holy shit. Like this is the definition of like creativity and just like being different. It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah. And like, it's one of those movies where I think that, as much as everyone has like an individual experience with it, I think there is also like the universal, sort of message to it, which is like every person, every human being on earth has had the thoughts like, well, what if my life could have gone this way? What if I did this here? What if I studied more for this test? What if I got into this college? What if I did this? Everyone on earth has like those thoughts, you know, like if their life could have been in a better spot than where they are now. And I think that one of the great messages from this movie is just like to slow down and appreciate where you are instead of lamenting where you're not. And like, I think that they do a great job of making the Michelle Yeoh of that universe, like, and they explained it very early on, like, yeah, you're the worst one. You're the worst one in all the multiverses. You are actually the worst one. And so there's nowhere lower for you to go. And like, but then her, the lowest of the low, realizing that she can stop and appreciate her spot in the universe. Like that is, I think that's a very good message. And it's one that like, it is, I think that is one of the more universal feelings from this that I don't think a lot of movies have really gotten a chance to touch on. Like, and there's a lot to do like time travel and or like things adjacent to the multiverse, but I think that this one maybe more than any other movie really managed to like tug on that emotion, which I thought was very just like very unique. It's a super super unique experience that I don't think I've ever gotten from a movie before.
Yeah, because it is funny because like how many, like I now that I'm saying it, I can't fucking think of like, I can't think of a good comp off the top of my head, but like dealing with dread, right? Dread of life, yeah, of yourself, of like your family, of your situation, like to do it by putting one character in many worlds and many, well, multiple, because like Joy in the movie, her daughter, like also deals with it just on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Like that's where they kind of contrast. It is like it's funny because it's super fucking complex. But it's kind of simple when you just boil it down. Like, this is not like breaking down Tenet, right? Like, Tenet's complex, and you kind of either get it, and you kind of don't. And it's not even like, it's not like, like, I'll say this. This is mean. People are gonna like this comment. If you don't get Inception, I think you're kind of dumb. Like, I think Inception is pretty simple. If you just pay attention, listen for like five. If you just pay attention, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. Interstellar, that's a little more complex. But like Inception is one of those, for a while, we're like, that's the mind fuck movie, which it is. It's a mind fuck. When you think about it, it's very easy to understand. Tenet, I would not say is the Tenet's a little.
No. Yeah, Tenet, Ken, Jack, you brought up Tenet is the biggest heat check. Like, of
it's such a heat check.
Movies out,
which again, I liked. I said it right when you reviewed it. I said, I don't know why, but I got it right away. And when the movie ended, that my first thought wasn't even that I liked it. I went, I don't know how I understood that, but I did. That makes complete sense. And like, I even looked it up. I'm like, did I even understand that the way it was supposed to be understood? Like, I'm not even sure. But this one is complex. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But like, it is simple when it boils down to it. Like you said, Ken, like it's you're taking simple themes that have been explored in movies many times before, but you're doing it in such. It's like almost a cheat code. Like it is. It's a cheat code. Like instead of like flushing it out through like long dialogue and like tons and tons of like hidden symbolism, like it's all right there. And there's some symbolism, like I mentioned, like the circles and stuff. But like in terms of like what is happening, it is like it's a cheat code. It's using like very like point A to point B to point C D, and like it follows through all of that through by the use of multiverse and the same character in different ways. And I just think that's I think that's fucking awesome. It's rad. More of this shit.
So many good performances too. Even like not even beyond like Wayne or rather Kehi Kwan and Stephanie Soo and Michelle Yeoh, obviously the big three, amazing. But like Jamie Lee Curtis crushed this movie.
Yes.
She was so fucking funny in this. Like Jenny Slate in like her limited screen time, very, very funny. All of them were like, they were just the entire cast top to bottom was so fucking good. And like
sound had a part design, to play
and they crushed it. Sound design, really, especially sound, towards like Bagel.
And maybe this is the Tim and Eric fan in me, but the him eating the chapstick before the fanny pack fight, it just like there's a sound and there's like a like, oh, it's awesome. It's
you know what's one thing I wanted to bring up is we all saw, and Jeff, you weren't on for this episode, we all saw Jackass Forever. You did see it, mm-hmm. right, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. I don't
know. Yeah, and that movie has actual real grotesque mutilation to people's bodies, and yet the most I cringed in terms of pain at a movie this year was the fucking paper cut sequence in this movie.
Yeah. Oh man.
Oh shit. That's brutal. Yeah. Like I literally watched a bull run over Johnny Knoxville and almost kill him. Essentially. Like he admitted he wasn't able to come for like 2 years because of that sequence. And yet that was the moment where, like, oh, that is so, oh, that's so brutal. That's so brutal. It's weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
That all the unlikely things that they had to do were just like, oh, I think that was another great element of it, trying to find out what the most unlikely thing they could have possibly done in that moment was. Man, I just like, I'm so happy I'm getting the Blu-ray in it relatively soon because I already want to watch it again. And like, it's just one of those things where like, I've seen it, I watched it twice in back-to-back days and when it was in theaters, and both times it hit the exact same. And I think that's just such a testament to how good of a movie it was. And like, there's just, it's one of those movies. It's almost a hard movie to digest or to not criticize, but like talk about, because there's so many different scenes and so many different moments where like, I would want to call attention to it. Like we only got to talk a second. The rock sequence was so good. Like that's such a heartwarming moment. Like they're sitting there talking about the universe and they're like, yeah, most universes are like this. It's actually way better. Like where humans are.
Right. Like we're like she at that, in that moment, she thinks this is the best universe because there's nothing to it. Right. It's like, it's
yeah. Like there's beauty to that, man. And like, there's like all of that wrapping up towards the end is just, man, it's just, I was so impressed with this movie. From top to bottom.
They're, you know what some of the moments reminded me of stylistically? Edgar Wright stylistically.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like some, even like the paper cut, like when they're like, he's eating various things. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like, it's the way it, I think, kind of cuts those moments and the way your eyes are drawn to certain things happening. Like, There's nothing when he's explaining what they're gonna do in Shaun of the Dead, and like they just show like ears being filled. Like I love Edgar Wright, when he's like clicking, and Baby Driver's a lot of it too. Like there's just certain little ways that he cuts scenes together. And there's a little bit of like that here, not the saying that they're like emulating Edgar Wright, but like some of that reminded me of it. And when that's done with like action and stuff, it's always tasty. It's fun. It's
a lot
fun,
of those quick pans and quick trucks or whatever you call them. And then yeah. a couple tilts.
This is high up there. This is for myself and Ken Jack. This is up there with our obviously our number one of the year. Ken Jack I have this one at number one, the Batman number two, then Top Gun Maverick. It's only the three that I've benefit 90 so far. X, I like them Bear Boy to Mouth Tell a lot. The Northman goes all of 89. And then for Ken Jack, I think you have four 90s this year.
I think I have Northman at 90.
Five. Yeah, you have Northman and X at 90, Batman 91, Top Gun Maverick 93, Everything Ever All Once 97.
Yeah, and I have three, which is good, really good for me. I
this early in the year too, don't forget. Like yeah, we're not no, at the period where the great movies are supposed to be out yet.
We're last year, I think all of last year I had two 90s. I got three already this year. I got Jackass, which just that was a pure enjoyment thing. That movie made me laugh so fucking hard. The Batman and Top Gun. So this year, for all my cynicism, this year has already been a substantially better year to me than all like.
Get the cynicism up because we're doing Jurassic World Dominion next week.
Yep.
And the reviews, by the way, it's got a decent approval score on Rotten Tomatoes. But the reviews are like very funny. Like there's one review. I'm like, you liked this movie based on this review.
A lot of dancing around. Yeah.
Let's see. What is it? What does it say? Hold on. In the end, it is what it is. If you want dinosaurs chasing familiar faces, Jurassic World Dominion delivers. You want some spice,
you just hate that movie.
Surprise, you'll look everywhere else. I'm like, sounds like you didn't like it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it might be one of those movies. This has happened before where a previous film is so bad that that its next installment is just serviceable and so people like it more. Like I think the last one was so controversial that this one simply being okay might just be all right for people.
That guy's hedge was basically like, hey, if you're a fucking moron and you can only focus on dinosaurs, you're gonna love this shit.
If you like this dumb shit, you're gonna love this. If we're surprised by this and we like it, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
It might be all right. I'm bringing the old cast back.
Yeah. I'm fired up for Lightyear. I just want to get to Elvis.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like I have a feeling because so many more people are liking it that I'm going to end up having to eat shit on it, but I really want it to be bad. I want it to be bad more than anything in the world.
What a review from Peter Howell of the Toronto Star. Rotten Tomatoes picks out some really funny blurbs. The King Lives. That's the whole blurb.
Can I ask Jeff? I have a question about that. Cause you know more than this. Does Rotten Tomatoes pick out those blurbs or
I would assume that's how I've always assumed. Yeah. I could be wrong on that.
I've always been under the impression.
I would hope so. Because if I'm fucking Peter Howell from the Toronto Star and I write a whole review on what is going to be one of the more talked movies of the year.
Why would you pick that?
I would hope that they'd pick more than The King Lives.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I've always wondered about that. Yeah.
Austin Butler, though, playing Fade Rautha, the nephew of Baron Harkonnen in Dune Part 2. Playing obviously Elvis in this movie, played Elvis by Sting.
Elvis's unusually generous serving of ham is balanced out by a sincere and overall impressive Austin Butler performance. I think, yeah, Hanks's performance did get a generous serving of ham. He's quite fat in that trailer.
What happens when the director of Moulin Rouge makes a film about Elvis? A lot of shake, rattle, and razzmatazz. Okay, I love Baz Luhrmann though. Like, I like his style. It's fun. Like, it's the thing. Like, except for I fucking hate Great Gatsby. I really do.
Yeah. It's
but everything
so bad.
Else.
It's like, one of the worst movies ever.
It's so bad.
I hate that movie so much.
And like, I don't even like it. My score on that's not even that crazy low. I don't believe. I would say I probably have it at like I may have it like 65, 61.
Did
okay.
See, did you see Elric's blurb on it? Was, This leaves us with an Elvis Presley movie that's about Baz Luhrmann, which is exactly what I was expecting.
That's what I want, though.
From like, your Elvis just, biopic.
Like, somebody said it. It's like, fuck it. If we're going to have this weirdo just come out with wild artistic movies every 7 years, I read the last year, like, then I'm all for it. Also, I haven't seen it. I want to see it. I got to find out how to see it. I got to see this Crimes of the Future movie from David Cronenberg.
Me too, dude. Oh, my God. I can't wait for that.
People are talking about it.
Yeah.
People are like, you're going to walk out. It's disgusting. It's unwatchable. Like, I can't wait. Now I want to see it more than anything.
It's and like, that is not my thing. Like, that is very much not my thing. I don't like shit like that. Yeah, this movie's apparently fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Do you remember another tangent here? Because I know we got to get to the draft. I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was the movie that Siskel and Ebert reviewed by David Cronenberg, where Ebert said, I think this movie accomplishes all of its goals, but I found its direction to be so grotesque and uncomfortable that I have to acknowledge and appreciate what he did, and I hate it. Like, that's how he ended his review. He's just like, this was so well done that I despised this movie. It wasn't one of his popular ones. It wasn't Thing, wasn't The Fly.
A History of Violence, based on that description. It was like The Brood. The Brood.
It was earlier, because it was when Siskel was still alive. So it was pre-1998. But I'll have to send you the clip, because Siskel laughs at the end of it, where he's just like, I hate this movie because it was too well made, essentially, is what he said. Which I get that with Cronenberg. Yeah.
What a wild fucking guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very versatile, though. I mean, when he...
His Viggo movies are awesome. Like, all of his Viggo movies have been basically Eastern Promises, History of Violence, like, awesome movies.
Yeah.
So good.
Fucking Scanners. Wild, wild, wild movie. Okay, draft time. Next week, Jurassic World Dominion. Sure.
Dominion. And we're not getting an actual minion in it. Bullshit. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I heard we don't get to see Elvis dead in the movie Elvis, like, dying on the toilet. That's fucked up.
I told you, we were left. The best review of that movie was, they're like, the man doesn't eat in the movie.
Yeah.
He's one of the world's greatest eaters.
And number one eater all time.
And not even one scene about eating. He doesn't make one peanut butter banana sandwich. That's a good, like, I would actually, if we interviewed Bosmer, I'd be like, yo, like, let's be real. He wasn't eating.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do our lists here. Movie scenes that make you tear up. We'll just say Chris first, Ken Jack second, me third. Let's do that. Movie scenes that make you tear up can be good. It doesn't have to make mean you cry because you're fucking sad. It can be tears of joy too. Because that makes my list much different. So
yeah. Typically, when I go into these drafts, because the Chicago guys are different to me with this, where they go, and this is why they work, is where it's just like, these are my personal picks. This is what I love. Where I actually draft typically based on, I want to win the draft. Like, I want to have the best, like, I want people to vote for my picks. This one's going to be a little bit different, with the exception of the first pick, maybe. I got to go with the final 45 minutes of Avengers Endgame. That movie has the best. Yeah,
that was on my list.
Yeah, that movie to me has the best blend of nerd tears and actual, like, emotional cry worthy moments. I mean, the last 45 minutes, it's very vague. I guess I would probably limit it to the portal sequence, but the moment
I would say you need to narrow it down.
Okay, then I will say the portal sequence.
Okay, so then you did take what I had on my list. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would. That
Tony Stark thing did not make me cry.
Really? You see,
the portal was tears of joy. We were crying in a press screening. Me, Ken, Jack, and Coley.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that you could make the argument that's the, you know, it's not, in fact, it's not arguable. It's the biggest moment in movie history, that moment. And 11 years of filmmaking for that moment. You saw the characters all die in Infinity War. You come back, and the way it's built up. And so I do complain a lot about direction in Marvel movies. The way the Russo brothers played that, so perfect. Just the slow rollout and Silvestri's score. That is a movie that, like, 20 years from now, AFI is going to release a list of the 100, like, best, most influential movies ever. It's going to be on that list. Like, that movie was such a huge deal. And
yeah,
that moment,
it's
without a doubt,
forever.
Yeah.
And that moment is going to stand with people forever. So, portal sequence and Endgame.
Good pick. Good pick. Ken Jack, your first pick.
I know. I think I'll get my next one on the turnaround, so I'll go with a different one first. I'll do the Pokemon, the first movie, Ash freezing, getting petrified. That's that scene. That's the first time I ever cried in a movie theater. I forget how old I was. I think that was like 1999 or whatever. But, like, I went there with my mom. I was bawling my fucking eyes out as all the Pokemon were crying and bringing him back to life with their tears. It's just brutal. It's a brutal scene. It fucking crushed me as a little kid. And it's still, because I rewatched it. It was funny. Like, me and my friends found the VHS of it at a thrift store. We bought it, realized none of us had a VHS player. I had to buy a VHS player. And we watched it. And we were still all tearing up at that scene. It's incredible. Such a good scene.
That's the surprise second pick. That's you taking, you just took Mitch Trubisky number two. No, that's a
no. That's disagree.
I like Trubisky, but I'm saying the weight of that pick, I didn't think you'd pick Pokemon.
Yeah.
The first movie, which was redone in CGI, by the way.
Yes.
3D animation on Netflix, which when I watched it, I didn't realize that. And I'm like, boy, is this familiar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow. Wait,
they redid the whole movie in CG on Netflix?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it wasn't for Netflix, but it was on Netflix. That's where I saw it.
The original animation is so much better. Plus, you get like Pikachu's Vacation in there.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Togepi is great. So, such a good movie, too, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, it was a remake. It was a remake of it. I was like, man, this seems fucking familiar. I'm like, well, because I've seen the movie before. My pick in the first round, the Remember Me scene from Coco.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the scene from Remember Me with the Twin Towers.
The ending to Remember Me.
No, that'd be crazy.
Like, that scene made you cry.
I'd be the only human in the world that teared up at that. No, Coco, Remember Me scene. That movie, Jesus Christ. That movie was a slow burn of a cry. You knew it was coming. You're like, fuck, she is going to pass away in this movie. And there's going to be some really, really sad shit. And when she starts singing, oh, my God. That Coco is so good.
Great movie.
Fantastic. And then I'm going to go double Pixar. I'm going to go the beginning of Up. Yeah. Because the beginning of Up is like such an iconically funny thing that like they open the movie just making people cry. Like that's so Pixar. Like when you talk about Pixar cry moments, like the fact that they just open it up, you're like, oh, look at this cute family. Then you're like, what the fuck? You're like, shit, we've been in the movie theater for 10 minutes.
Chris,
crazy. And the music is absolutely just unbelievable.
We determined, by the way, Chris, last time we talked about Up with Believe Coley, that the reason she died was because of the old man. Because she definitely had a very curable disease, but he just couldn't afford medicine because he sold balloons at the park and made like $1 a day.
Yeah,
it was his fault.
There's something very sinister about Up. I mean, his guy's wife dies and he essentially has a complete nervous breakdown. Like he just decided, like, it takes a lot for somebody to say, my wife is dead. I'm going to buy thousands of balloons and fly my house to these famous, like, you know,
basically kamikaze my house into a waterfall. That's what he wanted to do.
You know what's the one problem I have with Up, though? And you're right. Like, that's
they're amazing. Too mean to the dog. That's your one
Michael
problem,
Giacchino, right? By the way, did that score. I think that's the only Oscar
winner. Won the Oscar for it, yeah. Up is so, like, because that was, it was social media era, but when that movie came out, immediately everyone was like, the first 10 minutes of this movie are amazing. The first 10 minutes of this movie are amazing. I don't actually think Up, after those first 10 minutes, is as good as some people.
I've heard that take before. I don't agree with it.
I really like Up. I think it's one of the like top like 10, is like 6 to 10 Pixar movies ever. But that sequence is gold. Like it's just so much better to me than the rest of the movie.
Ken Jack, round two.
Okay, for me, this sucks. I want to take the pick that I need because it is my actual number one. But I wanted to get crowd love on the first one. I think I'll go with the one that's been picked with my heart. Children of Men scene in the stairway with the baby where everyone stops fighting and like lets them out. That scene with the score that hits with it. It is, I think, so fucking good. Every single time I've watched that movie, and I've watched it probably like 10 times at this point, that scene makes me cry. And I can't help it. And I don't know why. That's one of those things that I think is beautiful about that movie. Is like, I watch that scene and I start crying. I don't know why. It's not happy tears. It's not sad tears. It's just like, this is an extremely emotional moment. And that resonates with me a lot. And I have no fucking idea why that is. And it crushed me. And Clive Owen never got justice after that movie. He never got cast in a bunch of really shit movies.
Yeah.
Needs to be more good stuff. He's a great actor.
I feel like that's an actor who, like, in the next 5 years is going to have some big comeback. I don't like. Yeah. He always had a pretty high approval rating.
I think I saw him in something recently. He had to, like, Shoot Him Up or whatever with Paul Giamatti, like, after that. Like, how do you
the movie? Isn't that movie where Paul Giamatti kills a guy with a carrot?
Yeah, he kills a guy. Clive Owen kills a guy.
Or is it Clive Owen who does that? Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah, Monica Bellucci in that.
Yeah.
That was just like, we need a hot people in one spot. And we'll make it work.
Now I got two, right, Jeff?
Oh, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I was trying to remember what he was in recently. It was Curb. I forgot about that. Where
what do you call it? He has the play or whatever, and Larry's there. Yeah. It was so funny. It was such a good episode.
My second pick, this will actually be the third Pixar movie, which shows, you know, the kind of job they've done. Toy Story 3. Specifically the ending where Andy.
Yeah, that, I would have picked it, but I've Pixar'd out, so I wouldn't have taken it.
Yeah, either. Those three movies are so good. And I know, Jeff, we talk all the time, and I agree with you how when people say a movie is unnecessary, that's like a dumb take. Like, of course, but Toy Story 4 was so goddamn unnecessary. And I don't even hate it. Like, I don't hate it, but why'd they make that? The series ended. Like, Toy Story 3 was so perfect. And I think the ending to that movie, it's cornball. Like, it is cheesy. But it makes
I wouldn't say that. I actually don't agree with that.
I think it's
incredibly earned. I think it's very earned.
While
I do really like Toy Story 4, it kind of hurts that a little bit, because the end of Toy Story 3 is, I think it's super fucking earned.
It's earned, but the idea that like an 18-year-old would spend that much time like lamenting, handing over his toys, I was kind of like, yeah. But dude, don't get me wrong. It's one of my favorite movies. I'm just bringing that up. And really, it's, yeah, like you said, it's earned. It's emotional. It works for these characters. They go through so much. Toy Story 3 is such a great movie, man. So, yeah, that one always stands out to me. I mean, Toy Story was the first. I don't remember it because it was, you know, I was a few weeks into my life. The first Toy Story was the first movie I ever saw in theaters. So I remember I was 15 seeing that movie and being like, oh, this thing just completely broke me. So, yeah, that one stands out.
Round three, pick one.
This is the one that no one's going to understand. And this is where I'm going with the ones that just appeal to me. And this would have probably been my number one if I was just talking about personal fandom. The Dark Knight Rises. And
all right, what scene?
It's, you could go with a lot of scenes in the last 20
minutes. One.
I know, but I know exactly which one it is. It's when Batman reveals his identity to Gordon. The a hero can be anyone, even a man doing something as simple and reassuring as putting a coat around a young boy's shoulders to let him know.
By the way, that's a big assumption that Gordon didn't put coats around many boys' shoulders and that murder fucking.
Was he a pedophile?
Well, I mean, I bet Gordon was consoling plenty of murder families at that point. Like, Gotham, a dumpy place. Big assumption by Bruce Wayne that
we had to move Gordon to a different district. He kept putting coats on little kids. No one knew why.
Fair enough. But I remember when the Chicago guys did their draft, I posted that and said, I saw that movie right before my junior year of high school with probably about five or six guys that I was going to high school with at the time. Several of them did not talk to me after that. And I don't believe that was a coincidence because I was the one guy in a movie theater for a Batman movie who broke me. And as much as I love other iterations of Batman, the Nolan films just perfectly captured how much Bruce Wayne's life just sucks. Like, he's just had a sad life. And the way that finally in that moment, Batman's acknowledging like to Gordon, dude, you're like, you've been the ultimate good guy. Like, I'm here because of the way you treated me. Oh, it breaks me every time, man.
Ken Jack, round three, your pick. That's a good pick, though. That's a good pick.
I'm going to go with the Iron Giant sacrificing himself. Oh. Another great Disney moment. As many LCB fans will note, but that scene always crushed me. Even as an adult, I rewatched it for the first time in a decade, a few months ago. And man, that scene still crushes because the soundtrack leading into it, him doing like this, like saying Superman as he goes into the fucking nuke. Oh, and then the relief too when like the piece starts moving like later on. Like that is just a big 1-2 punch of pure cryedom.
Quick observation, and that's like this is ironic. Iron Giant and The Dark Knight Rises have the same ending. Its character sacrifices himself. Yeah. Everyone laments him. Final shot of the movie is the realization that maybe not
flying away to blow up a nuke too.
Exactly. I know that's it. Nuclear bomb's about to kill the city. Sacrifice yourself. Juxtaposed. Oh shit. At the end, here's the big reveal. I remember like 5-6 years ago, I rewatched Iron Giant. I'm like, this movie is almost fucking Pete for Pete, the ending to The Dark Knight Rises in a weird way. But dude, yeah, that's so great. I remember being a kid. I bawled my eyes out of that. Great Vin Diesel role. Maybe the best Vin Diesel role.
Yeah, probably is.
Superman.
Jennifer Aniston, too.
My round three. I'll rip through these because we're extending on time here. Rugrats in Paris. First time I ever teared up in a movie. I went on the Last Forever scene where Chucky's looking into the clouds and sees his mom. That's for them. I ever remember being. I actually like hit it. I was like, oh fuck, you cry in movies? What the fuck? Yeah. And I just remember like, oh geez, this is embarrassing. Farm Plainville, Connecticut. Lowe's. Now it's an AMC. Might technically be Farmington. But yeah, I remember crying. It was very sad. It's a very fucking sad scene for a Rugrats movie.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I think Cyndi Lauper did that song too. It could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure. Round four, I'll take the first pick. Field of Dreams, Ray and John having catch in the movie. That's a tearjerker. Now that my dad's passed, I'm gonna rewatch it. We'll see what the fucking meaning is on that for me. But boy, and you know what? Fuck anybody that was such a loop. By the way, I mean, like, I'm a big MLB hater. I think MLB does so many things wrong. That was such.
That's because they canned your ass, motherfucker. Yeah,
true. That MLB did such an amazing. Now let's separate MLBAM from Major League Baseball. MLB did such a right thing with the Field of Dreams thing last year, and people were pooing on Kevin Costner coming out, and I was like, "This is awesome! What the fuck is wrong?"
So cool.
Yeah, that was the highlight of last season.
Yeah, losers. Yeah. Like, just like, this is cool. Like, yeah, it's corny, of course. Like. We know it's cheesy. It's Kevin Costner out on the field. It was awesome. So yeah, that's my pick in round four. Ken Jack, round four.
I'm gonna go with the ending of Gladiator. Just that entire end sequence. That's one of those movies. Like everyone had that sort of like feeling on Gladiator where they thought it was the best movie in the world for a little while. Which like I don't think it's there anymore, but like I still think it's an awesome movie. And that ending scene with like the Enya song starting to hit. And like, what's our good friend of the pod, Jaimin Hansu, just being like, "I'll see you soon, but not yet." Everything about that moment crushes. And man,
and then Russell, who knows? He goes there. They time travel, apparently.
Yeah, now apparently they time travel, and Russell Crowe's gonna fight across time in every single war in Gladiator 2. Can't wait for that one. But that scene, still to this day, it kills me dead and gets me to cry.
Chris, last two picks.
Okay, last two picks for me. Oh, man, there's so many. I'm going to go with a recent movie, and I think this is the one actually White Sox Dave went with. Recent film, A Star is Born. The ending to that movie scattered me, man, because those two were so good together. Bradley Cooper needs to direct another movie, dude. Holy shit.
I would agree.
There's so many. I guess in terms of my fandom, I got to go with this one. The train sequence in Spider-Man 2, when they all carry him. And it's not even when they carry him, because that's very cheesy. You know, you do the Christ imagery with him being carried, but he's just a kid, no older than my son, which is just such a perfect encapsulation of everything that is Spider-Man. Like the fact that this is a guy who's basically putting his life on the line daily and nobody knows who he is. And he's a child. Like, he was just out of high school. Moment always stands out. So those are my last two picks. Yeah.
The Star is Born was a fucking start to finish tearjerker, mostly because you also knew what was going to happen multiple times, and you're like, oh fuck,
awesome movie, so good.
This is gonna be a big
one. One best picture, but yeah.
Ken Jack, your last pick.
All right, for my last one, I will pick the ending sequence of Saving Private Ryan, where old Private Ryan is like, "Tell me I'm a good man. Tell me I've lived a good life." Like. That scene, especially coming off the heels of Tom Hanks dying in that, Captain Miller, I think it was such a bookend on that was like a 25-30 minute fight sequence when they're in that town, and like it's like brutal action going crazy. And as it winds down and gets hopeless, you know, planes come in, save the day. Tom Hanks dies. It flashes forward to older Ryan and him saying that. That part still kills me. And that was a great soundtrack. That was John Williams as well. And man, that moment. More than I think any movie I've rewatched recently, that one really got me bad in the feels. Got me tearing up big time.
Good pick.
Yeah, it's a really good pick. And then the last one, if we're talking just only sad cries, I still think the My Girl funeral scene probably is probably up there. He needs his glasses. Which, by the way, watching that movie, which I don't think I've watched the movie, I'll ever watch the movie start to finish again. But like, whenever you're reminded of that movie, and you just think of the fact that Anna Jeanflee plays such a funny character in Veep, will just never not be. Hilarious. I could have picked Fast 7, See You Again. What a great thing. But I'm gonna go different. Castaway, Wilson. I'm gonna go different.
Oh, my dad again. Good pick. Shit.
Major. No. My pick is Major League when Cleveland wins the pennant. Because for me, the only sports title I had for professional sports teams was Major League up until the Cavs won in 2016. It's always like a because it's just like it's a thing you hear that. you, which thank God they didn't do it with the fucking with draft day. Thank God they didn't. If they would have won draft day, I might have burned the studio down because it's earned in Major League. And they don't. To be fair, they don't win the World Series; they just win the pennant. But it is like an all time for my dad. And I always joked, we were like until the Cavs won, that was it. Like that's what we had. We had Cleveland winning the pennant in Major League, and it just sounds and feels real. So it's an all time. It always gonna be goosebumps, make you tear up a little bit. Those are some good lists. Shout out to Pokemon Ash Freezing being. I may watch that tonight. I might
Dude,
watch.
It's so good. It's quick too. It's a fast movie. Like it's such a good one.
I guess that's it. Jurassic World, man. We gotta bring someone on for Jurassic World.
Do we have any dinosaurs or anything? Maybe large, maybe
like big dinosaur fans.
Oh, I thought that was a good joke. Whatever.
A dinosaur. That's just mean.
That was funny.
I feel like I either Nick or KB has a secret, like big
Nick might
Nick definitely loves dinosaurs. He could tell you like if something's in the Triassic era just by looking at it. Like, yeah, he's one of those dinosaur guys.
KB will either think people think Nick and KB think everything is lame. They really don't. But that I could see KB thinking dinosaurs are lame. I don't know why.
But that like,
they think though. Things are significantly less lame than people think they think, but I could see KB thinking dinosaurs are lame. Nick, I bet Nick fucking loves Pokemon. If we were talking about Pokemon again, Nick will be on for that. Okay. That's it. Make sure to check out the bracket in the middle of the week. You're doing a look back at the 16 best winners, right? Is that coming up?
That is coming up. The bracket of winners.
The brackets bracket.
The bracket of bracket winners.
That's it for Ken, Jack, and Chris. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Sweet. Thanks.
Great shit. Great shit, boys.
See you, fellas.
Good work, guys. Have a
good week at the box office, folks.